Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, a lot happened on SmackDown, Alex, but by fiat, I am told we have to begin with the Maximum Male Models. The world wants to know. Alex, what'd you think? I think we called it here on this show, who the participants would be, or on some podcast I did. We called it Mason Mansoor with new pronunciations, with Max Dupree describing every detail about their fashion and charisma and perfect body parts and titillating qualities. Alex, what'd you think?
It's funny because you and I were on together like a month ago.
Yep.
And I asked you who you thought it was going to be, and you said Mansoor, and you asked me, and I said Mace.
Yes, I was thinking it was us, yes.
Yeah, and we never connected the fact that it could be both of them.
Yep.
So I got the biggest kick out of, because when Mace came out, I'm like, yes, I'm going to rub it in his face. I was right. And then Mansoor came out, and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that kind of sucks, but whatever.
Oh, wait a second. You should be happy for us as opposed to sad that you have to share the credit.
Oh, no. I don't want to share anything.
That's awesome.
No.
So, anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I was fine with the segment. It is what it is. The only question I have is, do they have to wrestle in that attire, or what's the deal with that?
I mean, IRS wrestled in what he wrestled in. The Mountie wrestled in what he wrestled in. What are some of the least comfortable ring outfits that we recall? Heck, Elias in the jeans, Madcap Moss,
yeah,
Happy Corbin, a lot of street clothes. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out.
Ugh.
But my hunch is no. I think that they'll disrobe into some fashionable wrestling trunks that redefine, I don't know, titillating wrestling fans with their ring gear. I don't know. So did this segment overstay its welcome, or was it for what it is kind of just right? Because one, maybe it didn't overstay its welcome, but two, even if it did a little bit, Vince McMahon likes doing that. He really likes stressing something until it just sinks in to the point of being unforgettable.
I mean, I don't think it overstayed its welcome. It was what, like 4 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was fine. They got the point across, and I liked the little photographers. I got a kick out of that. I thought that was fun. But I don't know. The segment itself was fine. My issue with the whole thing is, I feel like we talk about this every time I'm on the show, but SmackDown is the land of the heels, and if these guys are going to be a team, they just brought back the Viking Raiders as heels, and now we have another heel tag team. Like, WWE does realize that the New Day can't feud with every team on the roster at the same time, right?
You know, I hadn't looked at that lay of the land. Are you assuming Maximum Male Models will be heels?
Is there any other assumption to make?
I say that in jest, but, you know, I mean, you never know with Vince McMahon.
Oh, whether he wants, I mean,
yeah.
Okay, maybe Maximum Male Models against the Viking Raiders is where they're going, I guess.
No, I really am saying that in jest. Yeah. I mean, the depth of the SmackDown roster has been an issue for a while. And in a more general sense, though, this does take two wrestlers who were not being utilized and puts them in a, I will say, buzz-generating gimmick. You know, I think that this is the type of thing. I mean, it was trending on Twitter for me, you know, the sort of customized trend sidebar on my Twitter. But Max Dupree was trending. And this is the type of thing that gets some buzz. And I think, you know, I mean, if you watch WWE, you're going to have moments like this over time as you watch. And some of it just goes really bad and it's bust. Other times things sort of work out unexpectedly, not necessarily at a top tier level, but elevating, you know, a couple guys just lost in the mix into some sort of gimmick that, again, causes people to sort of laugh or roll their eyes, but sort of in a guilty pleasure way. And it's just a little too early to tell, but I think Mansoor's talented, and they've been high on Mace, trying to get him, or Mace, trying to get, is that right, Mace, trying to get him into a role that works, and this is certainly better than the previous role he was in. So, yeah, so we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be speculation on who else gets added to the faction over time. You know, Dupree said you better be charismatic? At least he said as charismatic as them. So we'll see. I mean, how long do you think they're going to last, Alex?
Ooh, I don't know. If it's a Vince McMahon pet project, probably a while, especially if he's, you know, knee-deep in creative right now with everything going on.
Yeah.
You know, I would say tentatively a little bit. As far as another member goes, it might actually end up being Mace's former tag team partner. It might be Dijak.
I could see that. Jake Barnett on Twitter suggesting Pretty Deadly.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, again, this could just be a bust, or it could turn out to be much more than people are probably typically estimating at this point. So anyway, we'll have fun with it. I'm sure it'll come up as the show goes on here. We've got a lot of people calling in already on this special 4th of July weekend episode of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and I want to get to our calls. We're expecting to have, I think at least two on-site correspondents from Phoenix tonight. So we'll just keep the show moving and introduce ourselves and then get to calls. As noted, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for July 1st, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, documenting pro wrestling's controversies, big events, big matches, big firings, big hirings since the late 1980s. And those back issues are available when you become a PW Torch VIP member. We've got over 1,700 back issues dating back to the late 1980s. And I believe there's even a podcast that talks about those back issues on their 30-year anniversary. On today's show, we're focusing on SmackDown, and my co-host is Alex McDonald. Alex, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you.
Do you know what show it is that talks about Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters from 30 years ago?
I was really hoping that you didn't forget, but anyway, no, it is the 90s Past Cast with
And who hosts that?
Rick Moynihan.
Wait, who hosts it? I knew there was a Patrick. Who else hosts it?
It's myself, Alex McDonald, and Patrick.
Oh, that's right. That's embarrassing for me. Sorry. I apologize. All right, I don't know if that bit worked at all. I'm just trying to be funny. Yeah, so tell people about that show and how they can listen.
We are a part of the PW Torch Daily Cast family. Usually our show comes out Friday, sometimes Saturday, but most of the time it's out on Friday. And basically, we go back in time 30 years to the week with PW Torch from the same week, essentially. So we run down all of the major news and notes and things like that. And as the show has gone on, I've actually started watching Superstars and Saturday Night. So I give reports with that to Patrick, and we talk about those shows, you know, kind of like we would our show here tonight. But, you know, we're getting into everything right now. It is the middle of the Bill Watts era in WCW, as he has just been hired. We just covered Beach Blast and Clash of the Champions. So it's a big episode this week for those that want to listen. But it's a fun show if you want to go back in time a little bit or learn something new.
What's been the biggest surprise in going through those back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch as thoroughly as you have, that you've run across in terms of wrestling history, and either changing your understanding of something or something you didn't know that was a big deal that you hadn't heard of, or perhaps just a contemporaneous editorial stance about something or somebody at that time? Is there anything that kind of jumps out to you as like, whoa, this is I didn't know this, or I'm surprised by this?
It's more the real-time coverage of certain things. Like, it sounds so silly because we all make the assumption that, like, these guys in that time, like Cactus Jack and Steve Austin and Dustin Rhodes were all on the pay-per-view we just covered. You just kind of look back on that and assume that everybody knew they were going to be big stars. So it's interesting to see, you know, kind of the in the moment perspective on certain stars. And then the other stuff that, and we do this now, we'll do it tonight. The looking ahead and like knowing what we know now, like one of the things you mentioned was tentative plans for WrestleMania 9. Looks like we could be looking at Lex Luger against Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair against the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And obviously you don't know that at the time, but looking back on it, it's like, wow, it's crazy to think that all of that was on the table. And obviously, spoiler alert, none of that happened.
Yes. Yep. So all people have to do to hear the show is search PW Torch on your podcast app, and the PW Torch Daily Cast logo will pop up, and it gives you a get that mosquito. That'll give you a different show every day of the week, a different show with different hosts and a different specific theme, including the PW Torch 90s past cast. So it's free. Check it out. If you go VIP or support us on Patreon, you get those shows with the ads and plugs removed and some VIP bonus content on some of those shows too. So search PW Torch to subscribe free or go VIP. Full details on all the ways you can sign up and get these shows and those shows with the ads and plugs removed, plus all our VIP exclusive shows and access to the back issues we're talking about, over 1,700 back issues of real-time first draft of wrestling history coverage, just on demand. They're all there, sorted by year in our VIP menu. Go to pwtorch.com/govip. You can sign up with credit card, debit card, or PayPal through our main site. If you're mostly interested in just the VIP podcast and ad-free experience, then you have options to pay through Patreon or directly through your iPhone Apple account. And full details on those options are at that website, pwtorch.com/govip. But we're here to talk SmackDown tonight, and that means you are invited to call us. And the phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show. We've got 6 people on hold right now. And we give priority sometimes to first-time callers. So if you don't want to be on hold a long time, push 1 or give us a call. And we'd love to hear from some new voices to go along with our regulars. Speaking of regulars, we're going to start with Nick in Brattleboro, Vermont. And then on deck will be Evan in Chicago. Oh, by the way, before I do that, email address, if that works better for you, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. And then VIP members can look forward to the post-PLE, Money in the Bank Roundtable. Tomorrow I'll be hosting that just for VIP members, and that'll be available Saturday night late on our VIP feed. So check that out, and that also would give you access to our Sunday night post-AEW New Japan Forbidden Door post-pay-per-view roundtable. We also have just started running some old episodes of The Fix. The first ever episode from just over 7 years ago was posted earlier today for VIP members, and we'll probably do more of that. So it's kind of fun to listen to if you're a fan of Todd Martin when he appears on the flagship every 3 weeks, or if you're a VIP member listening to The Fix weekly, you can hear how it all started 7 years ago. So lots of reasons to go VIP, but we have lots of reasons to continue our show and talk SmackDown with a lot happening on today's show. As the final episode before Money in the Bank, the final competitors for the men's and women's Money in the Bank decided, and more hype for some other matches. But as noted, however long ago, Nick and Brattleboro, you are up first. Let's get to it. Nick, did you just feel like where you do a ring entrance and then you have to stand in the ring during the commercial? Yeah, I did that to you. I did that to you. I don't know if that was an honor.
I was talking to the crowd, just kind of hanging out, you know.
Yeah, and
how are you guys doing tonight? Happy 4th of July weekend. I'll be quick because you seem to have a lot of callers and interest tonight. The build for Money on the Bank and the lack of Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, and Cody, you know, obviously he was, you know, there was supposedly a big role for him coming up, kind of leaves me flat on Money in the Bank. I'm sure the Money in the Bank matches will be great, but then the other, I just kind of feel flat, and I think it's a major factor with WWE is their rosters are so lean right now, And the star building continues to be an issue with them. I mean, why isn't Walter, I'll just say Walter, why isn't Walter have a big match? I don't know. It just seems weak.
Well, Alex, what do you think of this as the as it's called, go home show for Money in the Bank? Did it work for you?
I thought this was the most paint by numbers Money in the Bank go home show I've ever seen, and I don't mean that as necessarily a terrible thing. It just kind of was what it was.
Yeah,
they had all the participants in the ring at the beginning, and then they did the Battle Royal. Everybody got a shine spot. And then they did the women's six-man tag. Everybody got a shine spot. It highlighted everybody in both matches. We got some interviews with both, SmackDown women's title contenders. And I mean, I thought the best thing hype wise was the Profits and Usos segment, but we'll talk about that later. But other than that, it was very paint by numbers. Everybody on the show got a little bit of shine and, didn't give too much away, but this is what you're going to see tomorrow if you watch the PLE. And that's, again, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it was, pretty ho-hum from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, WWE is sort of the fast food of professional wrestling today and historically. I mean, it's just there's, wherever you go to a McDonald's, you open the bag and you kind of know the smell, what the fries are going to be like, what the burger's going to be, it's just very, drive through window. I know what I'm going to get. It's consistent. And some of the faces change obviously over time, but WWE has their formula. And they just go with it. There is not a lot of rethinking how to do what they do right now because they have no incentive. Well, I shouldn't say no, they do not have a sense of urgency and they don't feel a sense they don't have a sense of need to change what they do. They're making record revenues and not a lot of it is tied to immediate performance. So the incentive for WWE right now is to be self, it sounds like I'm framing it more negatively than I intend, but to be self-satisfied, almost smug. That sounds negative, but with what they think they do well and what is taking them a long time to figure out. Like I wrote about it in my report on pwtorch.com tonight during SmackDown, that opening segment with the men, the wrestlers standing on the ladder. It's like, that is a choice WWE makes. They want the visual of the Money in the Bank. So they're going to have competitors standing on a ladder. It's visually interesting and it's novel and it's different than just the normal thing of wrestlers standing in the ring. But it involves, and not that people think this hard about it, but I think it sort of sinks in some sort of the subconscious level, that all these wrestlers are there to help promote an event and they're told where to be, when, and do what they're told. And while that is all true, and people know that intellectually once you get to age, 9 to 11, it reminding people of it during the show in that way, I think, undercut some of the sense that these wrestlers are outlaws and it's hard for the promoter to control them and they do what they want when they want. And some people are going to be company guys, but other people aren't. And that just felt like, sort of like when the wrestlers lined up Monday for Cena, everyone just sort of gets the memo and they just go where they're supposed to go because they don't want to get in trouble. And I think there's obviously a big negative that comes with that. But there's also just the formula of you draw people in, they have their lines, they know their characters, Cole knows what to emphasize. And, by the end of the segment, you kind of know what the main point was, and it's pretty crystal clear. They were hyping the match, and then it ended up, parlaying into not the most logical reason to have a four-way to determine the last entrant. But, they at least addressed it and went there. So there's, sort of a beginning, middle, and an end to the show in that way. But, yeah, I mean, it's Nick, it is formulaic. It is not inspired. WWE is not sitting around going, how can we do things differently and better? And so there's a certain polish and shine to what they do, but it's not, it's not like they're reeling and trying to figure out how to fix things. And sometimes that's when things are the most interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of, if you juxtapose it with Forbidden Door, you guys were talking about, how many buys are there going to be? What's, have they developed enough interest and stuff? If I had to pay for Money in the Bank, and not just because I have Peacock and I get $5 off because I have Xfinity, so I pay $5 a month for it and I watch
right.
other stuff. It would be like, I'm going to save my $34.95 this month and find out what happens.
And Nick, if you had to pay $50 for this event, you would have had a different show tonight. I mean, that's kind of my point. Like,
yeah.
They're getting paid the same no matter what. That's where that lack of, you know, you can sense it. And again, it's not to say that they're like just phoning it in. I mean, I think there's a routine in a formula that they are content with. And if they were trying to top last year's numbers and it would make a difference in revenue, and that revenue would be a significant percentage of what they could brag about in their quarterly conference calls to investors, they'd be doing more. We'd see Roman on this show. You know, but they don't have that. So this is more of a cruise control era of WWE. I was going to say for better or for worse. I think it's probably for worse. But sometimes, you know, when you're desperate, you do bad things. You hotshot. And WWE is not in the hotshot business. So in that sense, you know, it has an aspect that's better. But anyway, yeah, Alex,
Settle
out there. I'll throw back to you and then I'll throw back to Nick. Anything you want to add to any of that?
No, and when we talk about the Money in the Bank matches, there is one thing here. It's clear that they had a pretty obvious plan that there has been a giant monkey wrench thrown into. So whatever we're getting is plan B at this point. But to your point, Wade, I mean, we could say that with any pay-per-view basically since the network era, and even now especially in the Peacock era where it's not their network and their subscribers, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all of these shows feel different because you're not paying $50 for it. If we could say that about pretty much anything other than WrestleMania would have been a completely different show in this era if you were paying money for it.
And I'll say this. I think during the WWE Network era, Jason Paul and I pushed back on the idea that WWE wouldn't try anymore, you know, or that they wouldn't try hard anymore. There wouldn't be this incentive because, well, you know, it's $10. What do you expect for $10? And it's a flat fee and people's subscriptions roll over. And I argued, no, they were aiming, you know, for WrestleMania, they're trying to get 1 million buys. But for regular pay-per-views, they're trying to get, you know, 200,000-300,000 buys. But with the network, they were trying to get 2 million subscribers. They wanted more people paying less as opposed to fewer people paying more. And that formula required still working really hard to get to that 2 million subscriber mark. And they talked about there being maybe a chance to get to 3 or 4 million subscribers early on. They had a lot of incentive. And then those numbers would show up in the quarterlies. You know, the subscription levels would go up or down. They'd get grilled on, why did they go down? Why do you have such churn? So during the WWE Network era, I don't think fans feel a lot different now versus Peacock. I mean, it's $10 a month or it's $5 a month, but it's a streaming service that for a lot of people they get primarily because of WWE. But for WWE, the incentive is different because Peacock, they just got paid a flat fee. And they're not talking about the numbers. They'll send out a vague press release. We had more people watch this than anything. You know, and that can be people tuning in for 2 minutes to just check something out because it happened to be on the main homepage of Peacock while people were tuning in for something else. I mean, who knows how they come up with those numbers. They're not transparent about it. But with WWE Network, they still had incentive because they wanted those subscriber numbers to go up. And I think WWE just feels like that's not being tracked in the same way as it was before. And they're getting paid so much that it's like, we'll just kind of go about our business. We don't want to create waves. We don't want to screw anything up too bad. We got a good thing going. So I think this is another level removed from incentive to innovate than the WWE Network era was, Alex.
Oh, I completely agree. You said it better than I ever could, but that's kind of what my point is when I say it's not their subscribers anymore, you know, it's
people's
subscribers. And, you know, let's be honest, if somebody tunes in for 30 seconds or 3 hours, I think that they're treating it all the same at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so let me go back to Nick for a follow-up on any of that, and then you can also bring up a final topic if you want before.
Yeah, no, real quick, I'd love to hear your guys' predictions on the two Money in the Bank matches, and also just a shout-out to if anyone has ever been interested in The Godfather, watch The Offer on Paramount. It is fabulous. It's 10 episodes. you've got great actors, and the guy they got to play Francis Ford Coppola is great, and the actor who's doing Pacino is like it's him. I mean, it's a fabulous show, and I highly recommend it. And with that, I will let you go.
Thanks, I appreciate it. The Offer. All right, very good. Alex, anything? Give your picks for the Money in the Bank.
Okay. Well, I think.
And by the way, put in your context, did anything tonight, once you give your pick, change your pick? Like, was there some clue tonight that made you think yes or no to someone?
Oh, no. I'm in the same boat I've been in for about a week now.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go with one of two options with a possible third, but I think it's unlikely. I think one of the possible options is Drew wins, calls his shot next week on Friday for Clash at the Castle, and that's our Money in the Bank this year, and it's just kind of over and done with very quickly. I think that's a strong possibility, maybe. I also think Seth winning and then teasing it for God knows how long is a strong possibility. And then outside shot goes to Riddle. I don't know where that goes. I don't have as good of an answer to that, but I do think he has like an outside shot. But I think it depends. If they want to just, it's a plan B. Because I think we all know Cody was going to win, and maybe Seth was going to win and then have Cody be involved with it somehow. But either way, I think they're in plan B mode. So it depends on if they want to really plan B it and just have Drew win and announce his cash in and kind of punt the Money in the Bank for this year, or if they want to kind of drag it out with Seth. I think those are the two realistic options. What I want, though, is I want Sammy to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I want Sammy to win and for Heyman to say, okay, you can hand that over now. And for Sammy to just keep insisting that, no, I want to keep it just in case. Just in case.
Yeah.
And then when Heyman looks at him and goes, in case of what? He just goes, you know, just in case. And just do that forever. Like, I don't even care if it has, like, an illogical endpoint. I just think him saying something like just in case over and over again would be so entertaining. It would make it worthwhile.
And Sammy could even, go further and say, hey, if something happens and if Roman gets screwed out of the title, then I can cash in and bring the title back to the bloodline. Wouldn't that be great? You know, that kind of thing too, like rationalize it. My pick is Sammy right now. I think that storyline is too titillating to not do. And I think it can lead to Sammy, perhaps at WrestleMania, pick your time, but cashing in on Reigns and turning babyface in the process. And they just do a build where people start feeling more sympathetic to Sammy the way that the Bloodline treats him as an honorary member. And that feeling is there in the audience. Please, Sammy, hold on to it and then use it against Roman. And then I think it could be a huge pop. If they play their cards right, because Sammy's good. I mean, he's like really good. He's really good in the ring, and he's really entertaining, and I think people appreciate that. So it's actually my pick now, and it's weird because if that's the B plan, it could work out really well for WWE. I think there's going into this, there was an outside shot of like Cody entering somehow, you know, with one arm and climbing the ladder and stealing it from Seth or something. But that's only if they made it a mystery entrant or something. But that was sort of a just wild card, long shot, spitball idea based on Cody's promo on Monday. I think Cody would have won if not for this. And I think Sammy, it just, to me, Drew winning is kind of boring. And I think Drew already talked about getting a title shot at the Clash, I think. So that would sort of be like, forget I said that. Forget I already had it. I'm going to cash in this thing for something I already had. That can make him look bad. And Seth is kind of blah. Been there, done that. And, you know, Riddle works. I mean, yes, it gives him another chance, but I don't think they would have had Riddle lose to Reigns so decisively, only to have Riddle's only hope to beat Reigns and become champion is to use this sort of cheap heel tactic of beating a guy when he's down with a cash-in. And I know it's part of, you know, WWE canon now or whatever phrase you'd use, that it's an acceptable way to win. You earn it in the Money in the Bank. You get the advantage then to cash it in. But it's a really weak way for a babyface to become champion. So, So that's where nothing jumps out to me as like a great option, and that's why I'm kind of maybe more wishful thinking, but my pick is Sammy.
Yeah, again, I think that's the best of the plan B. Where I am with the McIntyre thing is, like I said, that's a total punt. Like, that's the plan B of all plan Bs to me, mm-hmm. Which is why, like I said, I kind of think they might do that. I'm not in favor of it at all because I don't think he needs the briefcase to challenge, but besides the point. The reason that I lean towards, you know, Riddle as a possibility or Seth is I've said before that I have a feeling that this could be their loophole to separate the titles again.
Yeah.
And those are the two guys that it would make the most logical sense to do that with.
Yeah. How about the women's side, Alex?
Oh, Becky, because I mean, I don't know. I can't make a case for anybody else.
Yes.
That's just anything that I care about at this point. Like, the field is not bad. It's not a bad field. I'm not saying that. It's just, I mean, this is way better than the terribleness of last year's field where it's like, well, I don't care who wins. But I think it has to be Becky because anybody else is just kind of a letdown.
I'm not ruling out Shotzi. She took the pin tonight, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So sometimes that's a sign, you know, make the winner look weak. I don't, you know, there's a psychology behind that, but it doesn't always work out. I don't have a good read on how they feel about her. Vince McMahon in particular, especially feels about her, but she kind of leans into the confidence and the bravado. I think there's sort of a sense that there's a chip on her shoulder. So I look at her and I think maybe Vince sees something in her, and that would be a way to elevate her. It's her walking around with the briefcase for a while. So I just say, you know, keep an eye on her, but it wouldn't be shocking at all if she's just a total non-factor too. I don't have a read on that, but I think a lot of people just rule that out. And I would say, don't just rule it out. I know Cole said his pick is Liv Morgan. She's on a roll. That disqualifies Liv Morgan from having any chance. Raquel just, I don't think is far enough along where they want to invest that in her, but I don't have her on the ruled out list. Alexa Bliss doesn't feel like the way they're presenting her, that's where they're going. So to me, the top picks are Becky and Lacey because they invested so much in Lacey. So we'll see if they have confidence in her to give her that. Although what a lame way for her to win unless she goes heel. And that's the way to turn her heel. So to me, I'm Becky, Lacey, and Shotzi. Outside chance of Asuka, which is kind of boring. If they give it to Raquel, that means they really like what they've seen so far, but think she needs a little something extra. And Liv and Alexa just seem like, to me, they're the ones I'd write off as the least chance.
Yeah, I agree with the Liv and Alexa. I actually want to throw Rodriguez in that too because I don't think they want to put her in that position. I don't know. The hard part is with the way Ronda's acting, anybody that cashes in on her is going to be a face.
I know. She's 9, not 10. Learn math. Wow. Ugh. I hope they're letting Ronda write her own stuff and not saying anything and just snickering behind her back. And I shouldn't pick on her. I mean, she just clearly just is different socially. You know what I mean? Like, she just doesn't know how she comes across. But there's such a, like, this just unlikability to her arrogance in the way that she delivers her lines. Like, this is going to be a zinger of all zingers. My daughter's 9 months, not 10. It's like, whoa, you can't do math? It's like, that's not a zinger, Rhonda. That's no one's liking you better because of that. So anyway, that's a whole other topic. Let's keep rolling the calls here. Our number, if you want to get in a line on the phone lines here, is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Reminder, you can always find the live stream to our shows that follow Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown by going to WadeKellerPostShow.com. And clicking on the link to the live feed, that's WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can also check out our Twitter feed at PWTorch. We post a link to the show along with a phone number and email as a reminder around the time that each of those shows ends. And also you can find a link and all the details on phone number and email at the top and bottom of my TV reports at PWTorch.com. I cover Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown live on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. And you can check out details on how to participate there. All right, up next, as promised, is Evan from Chicago. Evan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
Hey, Wade, how's it going?
Good.
Good, good. All right, I said I had it hot for you, so here we are, all right? All shoot, no feelings. First, I honestly believe the first thing that WWE should have done this year was take all of their plans, packed it up, and put a big note on there that said follow through. To be honest with you, and you can cut me short if I'm coming incorrect about it, but it seems as though with a division with a bunch of creative edge that was thrown my way, or, you know, everyone had their own standard, but again, that was kind of the purpose, right? Just to put it on, you know, kind of an overshoot on the UK with superstars like Lash Legend. And of course we appreciate these things, right? We always appreciate these things. But for me, the next best thing is to focus on where the next best five-star match comes from. And honestly, looking at the reports I've gotten from the past couple events that came to this city, I didn't even get to watch. I didn't get to watch Forbidden Door. I didn't get to watch, Hell in a Cell. Hearing about these things makes me realize that the next best option for a five-star match will come out of the hands of the unified WWE Universal Champion himself. And to be honest, if we can start shooting there, where would you best expect that to come from but a guy like Roman Reigns? And of course, you think about everything he's accomplished and, you know, the accolades that came with it and things like that. We'll be focusing on Reigns and how he's going about, you know, maneuvering. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but, you know, you got guys like Brock coming back, of course. People are still uncertain about what John Cena is doing. I even tuned into that just a little bit, even through the Bleach reports and everything like that. I just want to see the perspective of where everybody's focus is truly, especially when you got these guys coming in pairs. Now they got all the gold, and, you know, they run with these guys, then run with those guys. These guys might break up. You don't know where the next guy is going.
All right, so I'm gonna pause you, Evan, because I want to ask you a question. Are you proposing that WWE books with the idea of aspiring to have a five-star match, or are you saying just sort of for fun, what do you think is the best chance to have a five-star match?
There's nothing fun about what these guys prepare because they already expect themselves to follow through what they're going with. If we keep going with the preacher's attitude of everything is going to more than likely change, of course we're going to expect it, right? But what are we really getting out of that except for the motto of the fans' perspective, which is, are we going to see this? Are we going to get this? You know what I'm saying? So I don't,
okay.
I can't.
Okay, I got to pause again because I want to throw it to Alex before we get too far down the road here. I didn't get an answer from Evan there, but that's fine. The idea of Roman Reigns being the best chance that WWE has at a five-star match is probably true because it's depending on how you talk about five-star matches, and I assume Evan is in a more conventional way, a match that people would watch, who watch a lot of wrestling and think that was a perfect match for what could have been expected. It was a high-end match for its era, and it's not necessarily rare because some years might have a lot of those types of matches. Other years it might not be any that reach that level. But there's four and a quarter, four and a half, four and three quarter star matches, but nothing that's quite perfection. Roman Reigns' character, combined with the pomp and circumstance, the atmosphere of a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam type show, add some of that extra gravitas that can take something to that next level. He's not an athlete at the level of a dozen people that we saw on Forbidden Door on Sunday in terms of just, you know, the moves and the bumps and all that, but he's a master at his craft. And so to me, I will stay on the Sami Zayn bandwagon. Sami is so good, and he's such a craftsman. He's so good at the WWE style. He's got the indie pedigree. He's worked with so many great wrestlers. This would be a massive upgrade in how they frame him and present him. And I'm not saying there isn't some headwind and some obstacles and a chance of failure, but if they tell the Sami story right, with the dynamic between Heyman and Sami and the Usos and Sami and ultimately Reigns and Sami, and he wins Money at the Bank and he cashes in and he beats Reigns, and then they have a regular match, I think that can be the confluence of this long-term storyline, a legacy main eventer like Reigns with a nearly unmatched modern resume, and then Sami Zayn, this longtime indie darling, NXT standout, and then underutilized, but damn, he's entertaining on the main roster, finally getting his moment. And I think Sammy against Reigns in a perfect world could lead to what you would call a, quote, perfect WWE match, therefore a five-star match sometime in the year 2023. I don't know that Brock Reigns can do that again, because I just feel like it's entering sort of Cena-Orton territory where it's like, oh, again, you know, we've kind of seen these people, and that's a bit of an audible. I'm sure there's other matches that could reach that. You know, Drew McIntyre might be listening going, what about me? And Riddle might be saying, what about me? But to me, Sammy Reigns is the one that doesn't feel like 2 months ago it was in the cards, and now I could imagine it being that good. Your thoughts, Alex?
As far as answering the question goes, just to make very clear, in my opinion, WWE has no interest in putting on five-star matches. They want to put on five-star stories. And yep. I think that's what you're getting at here. And I like the Reigns and Zayn one. You're probably dead on. Again, it would take work to get there, to your point. But that has a good shot. Other than that, same thing from a story perspective. Maybe Riddle and Orton could get there at some point, one way or another. But other than that, I mean, I don't see much of anything else, honestly. That's really it as far as stories they have that could get there at this point.
Yeah.
You know, the closest other thing we had was on the women's side with with Becky and Bianca. You know, that was great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's, but I don't know if there's another story brewing like that in the women's side to give us something like that again. But that's really where I stand on it.
You know, in terms of who's in the pipeline, I'm not even sure. Like somebody who's not a main eventer yet, you know, I don't know that Bron Breakker's shown that he's a top candidate. I don't know that there's other women where those, again, it's in a WWE environment, not just, you know, the density of high spots and state-of-the-art athleticism with a crowd that loves that and is popping for everything. That's one way. But the WWE way of having that five-star match, which is, you know, it tends to be more deliberate, more storyline-based. Every move counts. They milk every moment. Like, I just don't know, you know, that Bron Breakker is at that point. I don't know who else is on the horizon on the men's or women's side for that with all those other pieces coming together. Like, I mean, Becky and Asuka could have a great match, but I don't know that they can have a five-star story leading into it. And I don't see other women on the roster in that realm either. All right, let's go to our next call. Up next is Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thanks for calling. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I thought it was okay. You know, I mean, a lot of times it seems like these shows, like when they do the Saturday shows, it seems like the show on Friday night is more like a pre-show. You know, it's not like where they go all out, like more like they would on Raw before the pay-per-view. But that's what it seems like to me, like when they do these SmackDowns before a big Saturday show. It just seems more like a pre-show. You guys get that too? Like that vibe?
That thought did not cross my mind in the set, because I felt that there was a lot of original content on this show. It wasn't just video packages. You know, like to me, a pre-show would be what AEW does on their countdown to the pay-per-view type shows. But this was, you know, a battle royal and a six-woman tag, three-on-three tag. And Dupree introducing a new act, and then the four-way main event, and an angle with the Viking Raiders. It's just, I don't know. I mean, it had a feel of like this could have been the second-to-last show, and the go-home show was next week. To me, it didn't jump out as formatically different than if a pay-per-view was on Sunday, or if this was, say, the penultimate SmackDown before the pay-per-view. Alex, how about you?
No, I mean, the pre-show realm thing is – you know, if your main event is Moss against Happy Corbin with nothing on the line. Again, this is more of like what I said earlier. It's just a paint by the numbers, man. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's shine spots for everybody in the show tomorrow. And, you know, it is what it is.
And yeah, and when we had the final spot filled for the men And so there was a development there. The Viking Raiders are fresh back, and now they what do they call them now? The new vicious Viking Raiders. What was the phrase, Alex?
Yeah, that's it. Vicious Viking Raiders.
Yeah, so it's even part of their ring introduction. Like that's, but again, that's Vince McMahon deciding what's missing from the Viking Raiders. What's the weakness? Oh, people see them as soft. They were doing karaoke in a car a few years back. We need to emphasize why you should see them as something different now. And he emphasizes that point to the degree of actually entering it into their ring introductions, the new vicious Viking Raiders. So anyway, that's a more of a just sidebar comment on things. But, I mean, you know, even Natalya and Ronda Rousey, I mean, they didn't share the ring together again. I'm fascinated by this, by the way, because, I mean, either they're working people or they're really hot at each other. Mostly Ronda hot at Natalya, because Natalya can, as people say, can dish it out but can't take it. And either they're trying to work people to get an internet buzz or they really aren't getting along based on, you know, observations from people. So, and Ronda just, you know, and Ronda's saying, you know, thanks for letting me show you how to promote a fight. You know, I don't know. That plays into the idea that Ronda's actually, you know, Natalya got under her skin and Ronda got under Natalya's skin. So I'm just interested because Ronda's such an interesting, quirky person, or a little weirdo, as Becky Lynch would say, because I always credit her for that, even though I like saying it. I am curious how that all plays out on tomorrow night in terms of their match. That's going to be interesting to watch and see if they try to tell the story of it being a semi-shoot or if it just is, or if they just go out there and have a nice match and are professionals and all is said and done. And they're not trying to go for that. So but you know, they each cut promos tonight. It didn't feel like a pre-show as much as reacting to what happened last week. And I think that's the smart thing to do after you do sort of a big angle or big segment like they did last week. But anyway, I'll throw back to you, Mike, for any response or a new topic.
To follow up on the Rousey Natty talk that you were saying, I wasn't really into that match with Rousey and Natty. I mean, I knew it would be a good match and I would enjoy the match, you know, once they did the match at Money in the Bank, but I wasn't, like, excited about it going in, but last week got me because, you know, that always wins me over, you know, when a heel, you know, is making fun of the baby face, kind of like when Kevin Owens is making fun of Stone Cold. So, like, I'm at the point now where I want to see Rousey beat the hell out of Natty. So that worked for me last week. I thought, the segment was really good, actually, if you know, when it comes to heat and all that. And
Mike, before I move on, are you siding with Ronda against Natty? Like, because to me, I thought last week Ronda came across pretty petty as a babyface.
You said she came off harsh, right?
Kind of petty. And then, you know, rubbing into Natalya, her baby is 9 months old, not 10, and acting like this was the zinger to end all zingers. Like, I kind of came away going, I kind of want to see Natalya beat Ronda. But their intent isn't that. It just didn't work on me as intended, I think. But it worked on you in the sense that you think Natalya came across more unlikable.
Right, because if I'm Ronda Rousey, you know, like if this was, you know, all real, let's say, like if I'm Ronda Rousey, if someone's making fun of me like that, I'm going to get pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk crap when I get out to that ring and I'm going to want to beat her ass at the pay-per-view. So if I'm Ronda Rousey, I'm going to get pissed. So yeah, I'm siding with Rousey. To me, you know, that drew heat on Natty. So, you know, but I mean, that's me. I mean, that's, you know, WWE, they did their job there for me. Like I want to see Rousey beat the hell out of Natty now. Not as bad as – you can nowhere near as bad, though, as I wanted to see, you know, wanted to see Stone Cold beat the hell out of Kevin Owens. It's not like that, but still it got me, you know, not like that, but it still got me to that point, you know.
Alex, how do you feel about
that?
Yeah, what do you think about the Natalya Ronda? If it's all exactly orchestrated as they wanted, or are you buying into just watching it that this looks like it could be Natalya just enjoying playing with, you know, Ronda's prickly, delicate personality. They were friends, and then Ronda took something too seriously that Natalya shot back on social media, and now this friendship has turned into some real tension, and Natalya's just sort of, you know, they're growing up in the situation, kind of poking Ronda a little bit and enjoying the moment, and Ronda's still fuming mad, just as she was fuming mad at fans for booing her when she came back earlier this year and had this scowl on her face when she's supposed to be a smiling baby face, and now she has this petulant, pasted-on smile. Okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'll do it, and I'll slap hands like I'm paid to do. Like, I buy into the possibility that Ronda's, like, legit just really mad, and Natalya's just sort of laughing at her for it. And if that's the case, and I'm not convinced, but I'm open to it, especially based on talking to somebody backstage who says that's how they're selling it. I'm intrigued by what happens here, but I'm also intrigued by the fan response. You know, are more people going to be reading it like Mike and cheer Ronda, or are people going to kind of be like, Ronda, settle down, loosen up, and kind of enjoy Natalya poking fun at her and Ronda seeming pretty thin-skinned about it?
I don't know how the fans are going to respond. I'm actually interested to see that too. I mean, not that it matters. They'll sweeten it to what they want it to be anyway. But with that said, if you go to last week and then it continued into tonight, like from my perspective, Ronda is a bully. And Natalya is just confident in her abilities. And, you know, she poked a little bit of fun at Rousey last week, but it was all innocent things. And then Rousey came out and basically told her she was a worthless human being. Like, that's not a proportionate response to what Natalya said. And then tonight, if you look at those two promos, like, if you watch those promos in a vacuum without knowing the rest of the story, you would think that Natalya was the face and Ronda was the heel.
Yeah.
And that, like, I watched Natalya's promo and I'm like, did they turn each other, like, without realizing it?
Yeah.
Because her entire promo was just, you know, you said these things about me and that's fine. I'm going to beat you in the ring. I'm going to make you submit with the sharpshooter. Like, it sounded like a Drew McIntyre promo. Like, no joke.
Yeah.
And then Ronda makes all these stupid comments and it comes across like a Seth Rollins promo. Like, I don't think that they realize what they're doing, but you're right, Wade. It comes across that, you know, Ronda is very thin-skinned, and like I said, she's a bully. And all of a sudden, she's this person who can rag on you, but as soon as you say something back to her, she crumbles. And it does seem like she's actually mad. Like, the way, like, Megan Morant brought it up to her, and she, you could see the scowl on her face. Like, she's very upset about this situation. And when she delivered the so-called friend line for not knowing what month your friend's baby was born in. Like, what?
Like, Natalya didn't say your son, and she goes, I have a daughter. You know, what's
exactly,
your deal? Like,
exactly.
Maybe. But even that's, like, sort of an honest mistake if you're not besties. But, yeah, that was just, like, I mean, if Ronda's sitting back, like, sitting at home rubbing her hands together going, I'm going to get Natalya this time. I'm going to get her. And it's like, I'm going to reveal she's off by a few weeks on my baby's. I mean, it's like, really? So, yeah.
It's just, yep. It all comes across so petty. And I don't know. Maybe they're, like, the thing is I want to believe that it's a work. But there's just part of me that just believes that Ronda is that petty as a human that it's not.
Yep. All right, cool. Mike, back to you.
What's the word, Wade, though, that Ronda and Natty have real heat with each other because
of
Twitter? Is this something that Natty started or Ronda?
I talked about that last Friday on the post show while I was doing the show. I was curious, and I messaged somebody who was at SmackDown backstage, and they said, yeah, Ronda seems legit pissed. And so they're either working the locker room or someone's misreading Ronda. But, yeah, and, I mean, it got personal on Twitter. But, hey, Daniel Bryan and Miz got really personal on, you know, talking smack or Raw Talk, whatever that was, and you know, went places you wouldn't think they'd necessarily go. And, you know, they were just, you know, smiling and yucking it up as soon as they yelled cut. So, I mean, it's pro wrestling. Of course, there's always a possibility, but I haven't seen it really, like, blow up as a thing, you know, where they're really trying to get word out. You know, it's not MJF calling reporters saying, hey, I'm really, you know, whatever, you know, shoot work, whatever that was. They're not, like, initiating, you know, trying to make it seem like this is going to be a shoot. So I just, and just Ronda being Ronda, yeah, I buy the possibility. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, look forward to their match tomorrow night, and we'll see what happens. But you want to talk something about the woman's Money in the Bank?
Yeah.
Becky's going to win it, but I actually hope that they don't go with the obvious here. And I think Becky, you know, she doesn't need it, I don't think. And I'd rather them go with someone where they can create a star. Like, I'm hoping either Liv or Chelsea gets it, even though I don't think it'll happen. I think if Liv wins, I think she's going to get a, you know, a huge pop for sure. And then, of course, when she cashes in, you know, she'll get a huge pop if she wins a title. So, you know, the question would be from there, though, like, would Liv's title run work from there? You know, we would see. But I agree with you, Wade, on Chelsea. Chelsea, I said this since the day she turned heel. You know, I sense the, like, the passion she has when she talks. She just goes, like, all out, like, with rage. She just has the passion. Like, she's great on the mic as a heel. Like, her effort is tremendous. Like, if you...
And I think she's genuinely unlikable. Like, I don't mean that, like, on a like personal level, but the way she portrays herself on TV, it's not like, oh, she's witty and funny and I want to cheer her ironically. Like, I think she, you know, sort of generates the type of thing where you get wrapped up in the moment and modern-day fans going to WWE shows are going to be like, I want to see her lose. I think that's how she comes across and how she carries herself, and I think there's value in that. I think getting people wrapped up in the moment is still part of the art form of this business.
Yeah, I think she's a great heel. I've always said that, and I think she's underrated in the ring. I think she's really good in the ring, actually. I've seen her in a lot of great wrestling matches. I think she can go.
Yeah.
I wish she would get a push, and yeah, I hope she gets the briefcase and, you know, cashes in on – who do you think she would cash in on? Could it be Belair or Rousey? Like, that would be interesting where they would go with that. Or could she hold on to the briefcase all the way to Mania? That would be interesting. What do you think?
What do you think, Alex?
If Shotzi cashed in, I assume it's on Ronda. And I would say it would be probably sooner rather than later as far as her holding on to it. I do want to throw out, though – they mentioned a couple of times tonight that the women's Money in the Bank winners are 100% on their cash-ins. And this kind of plays into the Becky story, too, where she's been in the slump lately. I think this might be the first year that the Money in the Bank winner does not win the title. And that's another reason I lean towards Becky. Because as far as her storyline goes, it makes a lot of sense for her to win Money in the Bank and then cash in on one or the other and lose.
Yeah, cash in on Bianca and then maybe lose to Bianca at SummerSlam.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And
I might
full circle with the storyline.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, can I follow up on Bianca Belair?
What Kyle was
saying this week?
Yep.
Yeah, because I know I usually agree with Kyle, but as far as, like, her being boring – I just, you know, she's not boring to me. I mean, she's just tremendous in the ring, for one thing. I mean, her match with Asuka and Becky at Hell in a Cell, to me, that was a 5-star match. I mean, that match was a classic. That match was one of the best matches I've seen all year long. I don't know if you guys agree, but they went like 20 minutes, and that match was, you know, freaking great.
Oh, and absolutely.
All three of the, yeah. I mean, Bianca Belair, you know, she stole the show, like, arguably two WrestleManias in a row, the one year against Sasha, the one year against Becky, you know, stole the show at Hell in a Cell, besides the Cody match. And she looks like $1 million. You know, she's a role model for kids. I don't think now would be the time to turn her heel. And I just think she fits that smiley baby face that Vince likes right now. So I don't think Vince would have any intentions of returning her heel anytime soon. As far as her goes, you know, her on the mic, I think she comes across as she says what she has to, and I think she delivers the lines fine. I don't think, you know, like, she's bad on the mic or anything. I think she delivers the lines fine. And she's okay.
Oh, Mike, I want to get Alex's take on Bianca overall, but also the last couple weeks where I thought there was a, a promo that wasn't so good, a promo that was better the next week. There's still – I have more confidence in her being more loosely scripted and less in kind of character mode and more just talking like she would talk if you were overhearing her talk passionately to a friend over lunch about something she cares about in her life. Like, I just think she's naturally going to grab people's attention, that she doesn't need the sing song EST bit that she's been doing, and everything just feels put on. And it's fine. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not so good, but it's never, I don't think it's ever great. And I think she has great in her. Alex, your thoughts.
As far as the promo goes with her, I'm in complete agreement with you, Wade. I think the biggest problem with her is that she gets stuck and then just falls back on those tropes. But I think if there was a way to just cut them out completely, you know, the EST and the girl and all that kind of stuff, if there was a way to just get rid of that and let her talk normally, she would be great. And the irony of the whole thing is her husband is in the same situation.
Yep, but, I agree. Yep.
But as far as Bianca goes on the whole, I think she's great. She's one of my three or four favorite female performers in the company. But she has this weird thing, and I thought it was isolated to last year, but it's clearly not. She's incredible on the chase, and she's incredible in the moment when she wins the title. But once she has it, it kind of falls off a cliff. And I don't know if it's her fault necessarily because, I mean, you know, last year on SmackDown, she had Bayley to work with, and that stuff was good. But, you know, Carmella and now Carmella again, and just some of the opponents she's had, just they didn't do her any favors. But for some reason, once she has the moment and wins the title, after that, it's just kind of over. It's a weird thing with her.
Yeah, and that's not a good spot to be in. You know, you want to be someone who can play all those roles. Celebrate, but also be a strong champion. And that's not necessarily on her, but I mean, because, you know, it's so much of what you're trained to do in WWE is to show up and kind of do what you're told. The famous Roman Reigns line, I just show up and do what I'm told. I want to get rich. So, you know, we'll see. But I think some augmentation to her act as champion would be good. Mike, back to you. Any closing words? I do want to keep the pace going here with other callers.
Yeah. Just real quick, Alex. Belair is in my top five too. I mean, if we're taking Sasha and Bayley out, it's Belair. You know, and I know I remember you, Alex, saying that you were a big Sasha fan too. So I think me and you have like similar tastes when it comes to like her and Belair and all that.
I would agree with you. Right now, for me, it's Becky and Belair until we get Bayley back, and then I'll forget about everybody else.
But yeah, wait. Have you heard anything about anything on Sasha? Because I heard they're trying to get her back now.
I don't know.
That would be great.
I don't know where it's going to end up. It's good if they get her back. They're going to have to give her, they're going to have to make some concessions to what her gripes are. And I just don't know if that they've got that in them to do that, honestly.
Yeah. Like they're going to have a huge agreement on money, I think. And then they're going to have to work with her. Like, does she want a tag title reign, or is a world title reign more important to her? You know, they got to get all that straightened out. I think really what she wants is a world title reign, because the original plan was for her to face Charlotte, I heard, at WrestleMania, and then Rousey got in there instead. So I think that's the first thing that got Sasha really upset. So I think they need to work all that out on what Sasha wants and negotiate between that and the money, and then maybe they can get something going. Let's hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex, what do you think of the prospect of that?
I think you need to show up for work and stay at your place of work and not leave like a child.
Well, there you have it, Mike. Less sympathy there.
I mean,
and that's my point. And that's my point where WWE's going to have to concede, because they would not have come down as hard on Sasha and Naomi as they did if they didn't feel that they were in the right and Sasha and Naomi were you know, in the terms they might use are being marks for themselves or being marks for the business. It's like there's changes in plans, and sometimes a bigger name gets signed and you lose something that was planned. That's part of the business. Sometimes it happens in your favor, sometimes it, not in your favor. And, you know, if you interpreted Vince McMahon saying, we're going to get behind you as a tag team, and then Vince McMahon decides, we need to break you up and set you up for two world title matches, which you're both going to lose, and then you get worked up about that because you want to lose under a bigger spotlight and a bigger deal, that's your prerogative to think that. And you might have a case that you're being treated unfairly, but, you know, at the end of the day, as Steve Austin says many times, it was a mistake, and I defend him on this. He said it was a mistake. You at least should have shown up and faced Vince McMahon and told him to his face what his thoughts were and not just no-showed. And, you know, WWE doesn't want to set that precedent. And that's why if they do negotiate a return of Sasha, I'm real curious how much give and take there is in both of their dug-in positions on how that all played out. Go ahead, Mike, final words.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's a tough situation, you know, about, like, who do you agree with? Was Sasha wrong or right? I mean, I think she was – in the right, you know, to a point, because, you know, she was thinking she was going to face Charlotte, and then all of a sudden Rousey came in, and then I think she was promised a good run with the tag titles, and then all of a sudden she hears for 2 months they're not going to be defended, and she was going to lose to Rousey. Naomi was going to lose to Belair. She probably thought everything was just going wrong and horrible. And she felt like it was the right thing to do, and she felt like she had to stand up for her craft. She does have tons of passion and she cares. And I admire her for that. You know, she gives a crap.
Yeah.
You know, some wrestlers don't. She cares. And I admire that.
Yeah. Yep. Very good, Mike. Thanks. Appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Yeah. Have a good weekend, guys. Enjoy the pay-per-view.
Yep. You have a good fourth. Enjoy tomorrow night. All right. We'll keep rolling here. We'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, good to hear from you. What's good on SmackDown for you tonight?
So, in all transparency, I did not catch a lot of SmackDown. I plan to watch it, you know, sometime before the pay-per-view tomorrow. But I've been listening to maybe the last couple callers. And, you know, I just kind of – I guess, man, I'm a little uncertain as to what is the what is the general feel as to how people – are taking Becky Lynch's heel run, because I happen to think that it's been great, you know, for her to be as immensely over and popular as she was. I really think it was a stroke of genius for them to turn her, because she had been dominant for 2 years and it was only a matter of time. I feel like even before she left with the pregnancy, I feel like she was kind of starting to do some of this bizarre stuff, and people don't really remember that, but I feel like she was starting to get into that lane, and I think people would have turned on her anyway, so it kind of beat everybody to the punch, and I also think that it helped out Bianca tremendously. But I say all that to say that I think that, to me, man, the clear-cut winners to me for Money in the Bank are people that are on the posters, which is Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins. I think that both their characters are designed to carry those, because they're both superstars, but they don't really necessarily have a lot going on, even though they're making everything they do feel great. I think that giving them the briefcases and having them carry that adds so much more intrigue to them. And I also think that with the story that they're telling with Becky and, you know, the losing streak or whatever the case may be, I think this is ultimately a way to get her back into being a baby face. And, you know, Rhonda, with this stuff that she's doing with Natty, you know, I think they should just carry that out for her to be a, you know, to start making a heel turn. And I think that we should just ultimately get Becky as a face against Rhonda as a heel in WrestleMania. And, you know, I don't know if you just do this. Becky's become such a baby face that she just lets Rhonda know up front that, well, not saying she becomes such a baby face, but she just kind of lets her know up front, hey, you know, I'm coming over to SmackDown now. I'm getting this match that you've been running from me for, you know, all these years. I want my one-on-one. And I think that that's something people will get behind. And I just think Seth Rollins is just so incredible as a character, man. Him being on the outskirts of Roman Reigns circling him when we know that they have so much history together, and Rollins can stake that claim as I'm the one guy that you can't run through. And, you know, just him sitting on a peripheral with that title, you know, I got a long, long storyline in store for that, which I'm not going to even do that. I'm not going to get into all that right now, but, I know that was long-winded, but, yep.
Jay, I'm gonna pause you because your connection is muffled, and I think I got the gist of what you're saying. So because of that, and we got so many callers, I'm going to put you on hold here and throw it to Alex. It felt like Monday Becky was the way Jimmy Smith called her win. This inspirational Becky did it. She overcame all these odds. And I was like, don't trust Jimmy Smith's tone, like his inflection. I don't think his instincts are great for certain things still. I totally trust Michael Cole, and if he expresses a certain emotion that leads you in a direction, I think it's worth reading into, you know, 19 out of 20 times, 100 out of 100 times, probably, you know, given how long he's done this and how in tune he is with what's going on. Jimmy Smith, I don't feel the same way about. So tonight just felt like more the same Becky, but sort of like Sami Zayn, if she's just so fans liked her anyway, she's been an entertaining heel. I do think there's no way Ronda Becky is going to work unless Ronda's a heel and Becky's a face. Especially with, you know, the sort of the petulance of Ronda, what seems like this petulant reaction to Ronda right now, where she can dish it out, but she can't take it verbally with Natalya, which makes me want to see it even more because, you know, Becky's going to dish it out and be happy to do so, and do so in a way that's going to get under Ronda's skin. And I think that brings out the best in Ronda as a heel. So, you know, it could be fun if we go that direction. So, yeah, thoughts on that, Alex, or anything else that you picked up from Jay's question?
He talked about Becky's heel run and how a lot of people have been kind of down on it. I'm actually with him. I've been a big fan of the heel run so far. And there's like a weird thing with Becky, though, too, because tonight, you know, she's so good on commentary and so good in that character that it took so much focus away from that actual match. Like, it was hard typing the report, you know, and paying attention to what was going on in the ring, because I wanted to just listen to what Becky had to say. Like, I had to fight the urge to just type everything she was saying on commentary, so I omitted all of it, you know, just it, as an overcorrection for not falling into that trap. Her star power just encompasses everything else in that division, so I think her heel turn has actually worked really, really well. On the Ronda topic, though, I do agree with you, Wade. If they do end up going with that for Mania, they're going to have to swap them back, even if it's just for that match.
Yep. And I don't think you can do it just for that match, because I think that people come out of that feud liking Ronda and disliking Ronda and liking Becky, and it'll be hard to go back. But one way or the other, that's gonna be the case. All right, very good. I want to get to our on-site correspondent, DJ, who has called in. And then after that, we still got Sean and William and Kyle and Javier in no particular order. DJ, thanks for calling in. You attended tonight, huh?
Yeah. I ended up getting some last-minute tickets for my cousin.
Awesome. So what'd you think? What you think of going live?
It was okay. It was actually a really packed house, which kind of shocked me. I didn't think it'd be that full. It was pretty much everything that was available was pretty much taken. I said, you know, 90% full.
Yeah.
And
what?
But yeah, it was a good show. It's a little sad we didn't get Roman or
No Heyman.
Other people. No Heyman, no Roman. The dark main event though, we got Seth Rollins and Riddle. So that was great. We had that was a good time.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that.
5 or 6 minutes.
Describe what happened.
Rollins came out first. Like, as soon as the show ended, almost immediately they hit his music. So Seth came out, the whole, you know, crowd cheered and danced along. Really nobody left because, like I said, they played his music so quick, they didn't give people time to get up off their seats. So pretty much everybody stuck around. Seth came out, you know, dancing, doing his thing. He taunted Corbin a little bit. Then Riddle came out. The crowd was behind Riddle all night. Like, the crowd loves Riddle. And as soon as Riddle got in the ring and kicked the flops off, Seth just attacked him. And before the bell, gave him a quick little beat down and posed to the crowd and taunted him, did the laugh. Rev gave Riddle a few minutes to recover, and the match got started. It was a good match. Like I said, it was pretty quick, maybe about 7 minutes. Riddle ended up winning with the RKO out of nowhere. After Seth started taunting him, started taunting Randy, he started acting like he was going for the RKO, hitting the mat, and got up and ran in, and Riddle caught him with a knee. And then Seth ducked a punch, then Riddle ducked the clothesline and hit the RKO. And that was the end. I walked right out as soon as that happened.
Was there anything happened before SmackDown went on the air?
Yeah, I got there a little late, but for main event, the only match I got to see was Nakamura versus Humberto. I came in right after the entrances. Nakamura won that. I can't remember how long it went. He won with the Kinshasa. Crowd was into Nakamura the whole time.
Alex, do you have a question for DJ?
Yes. How did the crowd react to the maximum male models?
They kind of booed a little bit here and there, but actually by the end, I don't know if it was just in my section, but we started getting a "this is awful" chant. So
not ironic or like, you know, like hate watching, but like just like let's just embrace this nonsense and silliness and have fun with it. That kind of awesome.
No, this is awful.
Oh, I thought you said this is awesome, and that's why I suppose ironic. Okay, that oh, now no. you're more matching my expectations. Yes, no, that seems like a more natural response to this. That makes more sense. it's such a Vince McMahon thing to do, this thing. And I mean, I just sort of stand back and watching it play out, you know, amused by it. But I can imagine a lot of people showing up for a WWE event and seeing that and deciding 8 minutes in to start chanting, "This is awful."
Yeah, they just, like I said, at first I thought they were just kind of, you know, playing along and booing like WWE wanted. But, yeah, just right after that, it's just, "This is awful" started, and it started picking up steam. So I don't know how many people chanted it, but I know, like, at least in the section I was in, a few people, like, it was a nice amount of people chanting.
Yeah. Was there a wrestler who just stood out as getting the biggest star reaction of the night?
It was a little harder to judge this time for me going because, as you guys seen, the show started with everybody on top of the ladders. But none of those guys got individual entrances. Like, they all came out together and in the dark. So, like, you know, they had the crew came and set the ladders up in the ring, and then all of them just walked out, like, you know, maybe a minute or so before we went live. So, and, you know, we didn't see them until, like, they got close to the ring. That's when everybody finally noticed them. And, you know, we cheered as they got in the ring, but none of them got entrances. But just throughout the night, the crowd was behind Riddle. Like, the crowd loves Riddle. I don't think the loss to Roman or even almost hurt him too much because all night the crowd just kept chanting Riddle all during the Battle Royal. And when he hit that RKO on Seth outside, like, the crowd just popped. Like, they lost it on that one.
Yeah, yep.
I thought one of my favorite moments was like, Seth Rollins just jumping out the ring. I thought that was so hilarious, limiting himself. Like, I was not expecting that. So that was hilarious to me.
And you know, Michael Cole said it might be a smart move on commentary because he's got a big match tomorrow night, and Omos is staring at him. Omos is destroying people left and right in that Battle Royal and in general. And, you know, what incentive does Seth have? I mean, it undercuts the notion that every match counts, every match has, you know, if you win a match, there's more money and more fame and championship consideration. But right now, Seth is focused on winning that briefcase and getting injured against Omos in a impromptu battle royal with no official stakes that benefit him. You know, I get the argument that there's a calculation there that he would make. It's not something you want babyface is doing, but as a heel, Alex, how do you feel about that as a finish or as an elimination? I guess it's better put this way.
Oh, I was all for it. It reminded me of, you ever watched the Pro Bowl and you see guys make business decisions about tackling?
Yes, totally.
That's what it reminded me of. And it fits Seth's character. Like if, you know, you were talking about Riddle. If Riddle did that, it would be like, okay, this is stupid. But since it's Seth, it works.
Totally. Yep. Totally. DJ, was there, besides chanting "this is awful" at the Maximum Male Models, was there any point where they seemed to lose the crowd a little bit? Was there a point in the women's match or one of the promos or even the Battle Royal where the crowd just seemed restless or anything that stood out like that?
A little bit during the women's match. It was a little downtime. Like I noticed during the entrances, Lacey and Shotzi got no reaction. When they came out, the crowd just made no, like Lacey got like a few polite claps, but that was about it. The male models thing, like I said, initially when Max Dupri first came out and they introduced him, you know, the crowd was just sitting there and, you know, he did all his talking, like say towards the end of him talking about Mace or what is it, Mace.
Yeah.
That's when the crowd started to boo. And by the end of him talking about Mansoor, I forgot his name, that's when the "this is awful" chance kind of started. So in the beginning of that, the crowd was just sitting there, and by the end, they hated it.
How did they air the Ronda Rousey and Natalya interviews on the big screen? Was there a crowd response to those? That was notable in any way.
It was a big ooh when Ronda delivered her final line. It was like ooh, like, you know, people were around me were saying like, oh, she seems mad, you know.
Yeah.
Natty just kind of, you know, everybody just paid attention, you know, like, but it didn't get much of a reaction.
Alex, is there anything I want to ask? Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, DJ. Finish your thought there.
I was just going to say, I just think that I agree with what you guys were saying. Like, it's that promo last week from Ronda just like she just shredded Natty. And this week, Natty did come across as a babyface. Like, to me, once I heard what she said, and I just sat there and was like, well, she didn't even say nothing bad for Ronda to respond the way she did. So I'm on that side. Like, I just want Ronda to be a heel. Ronda just doesn't work as a babyface at all. And I feel like this run is like she doesn't have her heart in it at all. Like, the first run, when the fans was actually accepting her, she seemed happy to be there. Now she seemed like she just came back, I guess, for the check or whatever, because she doesn't seem like she's really into the role at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I was going to ask something else about what did the New Day do after their ring entrance, but before they did the official on-air promo during that gap? Because a couple of weeks back, I was at SmackDown, and, I mean, the New Day were, like, shaking every fan's hand. They were – I mean, like, they did so much to fill time. It was crazy. So I'm curious what they did in Phoenix.
Oh, it was more the same. I remember hearing you say that, so I took note on that. As soon as they cut the music and went to break, like, we didn't have to hear the song the whole time, so that was cool. They did Kofi was the first one out the ring. He slid out and went to the crowd slapping hands and taking pictures in the front row. And then after that, I think Wood slid out to the other side, to the Hurricane side. And then he came around. He ran through the whole crowd from that side all the way to the other side and then up the stairs. And Kofi was in the crowd for a while, then he got back in the ring. And then he hopped out again and was taking selfies with the fans in the front row. So that's why when they when he said the line about, we're the guys that make sure you guys have a good time when you come to the show, everybody cheered because they really made those people's night.
Alex, is there anything else you want to bring up to DJ before we let him go?
No, I'm good.
DJ, is there anything else from the show that that you want to bring up in terms of, you know, we didn't talk Usos New Day, or I'm sorry, Usos and Street Profits. Didn't talk about the reaction to Moss. Like, is there anything else that kind of stood out that you want to share with us, or anything off camera?
Yeah, that one thing I noticed was after Corbin won his match, I mean, won the Battle Royal, the referee, Jessica Kerr, I noticed her running around, like literally running around the ring, and I was just wondering what she was doing. And it turns out she was trying to get Corbin's attention to tell him to raise his arms in the air.
Oh, wow.
You know, when he was walking around celebrating after, like he was clapping and, you know, pointing at the crowd and laughing. And, like, when he got on the stairs, she finally got over into view for him, and she was like, raise your arms, raise your arms. Like, throwing her arms in the air. And then that's when he did the little pose with his arms in the air after. So.
Oh, wow.
I never noticed.
Interesting.
What he's doing. So that was.
I didn't know that was part of their job description. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I've noticed other people, but I never noticed a referee doing that. So that was really stood out to me. That was odd. Are they really calling them the new Vicious Viking Raiders?
Yes, they are. They don't want you to have any. They got a what from the crowd? A laugh?
I said they got a real audible laugh from the crowd. Like,
yeah.
And when they
yeah,
New Day said it, we know it was one thing. But when the announcer said it, we just literally laughed. Like, is that for real?
It is for real. They're not the soft Viking Raiders doing car karaoke anymore. This is their serious business. Get it through your skull, people.
Yep, and also I thought Madcap came off a little. I thought he came off pretty good in the promo, like when he just said, "I'm just happy to be here." You know, it's like the crowd laughed and they started clapping for him after that. So I think he gained a little bit of crowd support from that line alone.
That's cool. That's cool. Awesome.
And,
well, DJ, yeah. Yeah, anything else?
Oh, no, I was going to say, I noticed that a lot. Like, oh, well, I said a lot. Yeah, I just noticed that after he said that, the crowd, like, laughed, and then people started cheering him. So he actually got a really good reaction when he won the match, too. So I do think that kind of helped him.
Cool. DJ, appreciate you calling in and sharing your experience on site tonight.
Oh, no problem. Thanks a lot, man. I just wanted to call because, you know, it's been a while. And,
yeah.
Like I said, I just got last ticket, so I just wanted to give you some info if you didn't have it. So just huge fan of the show. I listen every day. I've been VIP for 5-6 years now. Just wanted to do my part.
You did your part very well, and we appreciate it, and I appreciate you being a VIP member and supporting us.
Thanks a lot, Wade. All right, you guys have a great
yep.
night. Everybody go VIP.
Yep. Everyone go VIP and enjoy your weekend, DJ. All right, we will move now to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, thanks for calling. What have we left for you to talk about? Anything you want to disagree with or add to that we've covered or something we haven't brought up yet?
Oh, man. I have a lot to say, but I'll try to keep it as condensed as possible. Alex,
sure.
Always appreciate you. Appreciate talking to you, man, as always. I wanted to go back real quick, Wade, to what you said at the beginning about what WWE does, you know, the formula. But, you know, I just didn't like the formula tonight, you know, as far as, you know, at the beginning. It's like, yeah, you want the visual, but I want these guys to, like, hate each other. And I don't want them to think, oh, I'm just going to go climb the ladder next to someone and just – even though I want to beat them and I want to win something. And I didn't like that. But the other gripe I had was, as far as the women's match, I actually saw the email. You know, I get the WWE emails that pop up showing what's coming up, you know, on SmackDown. Like, other than the fact it was the Money in the Bank women participating in the match, what was the point of the match? Why would Shotzi want to team with Raquel and Lacey? It makes no sense. What is the point of that? Like, there was no point of the match. Like, it was a good match. Like, they did what they could to make it interesting. But there was no point of the match other than to, now granted, I will say the main point was Alex going back to Becky was awesome on commentary. That was probably the main point of what they were doing, which I do get that. But the match itself had no point to it. It was just they're out there having a match. And so Wade, I want to, you know, and Alex, I want to know what you guys thought about that, because I just want, there's matches. I want a point to a match or a reason why they would have a match and why they would have Shotzi, you know, for some reason, even though it's Raw against, and why would you have Raw against SmackDown? I don't want to see Raw against SmackDown. It doesn't make any sense in that aspect. So what did you guys think of that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird match. It's their way of saying, hey, here's who's fighting at Money in the Bank. And here's Becky, who's going to not participate but do color commentary. I mean, I don't think there was much more to it. This kind of goes to our kind of paint-by-numbers formulaic opening, or, you know, early in the show that we talked about, Alex.
Yeah, this is the trope of there's seven people in a match tomorrow. You're not going to have a 3-on-4. So the most logical thing to do is the best way to split them up is do a Raw versus SmackDown, because there happens to be three on each side, and then put the biggest star on commentary. Like, I hate to put it that way, but it's a time filler, and it's a way to get all the people in Money in the Bank on screen at the same time. And this was the easiest, most logical way they could do it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I agree with you, Wade, 100% of what you're saying, and you're right about what you're saying. It's just, we cannot like what they're doing and think they should do it better. Yes, they're making a lot of money, and that's the whole thing, is I agree with what you're saying. I just think they did it bad tonight as far as, give us a reason why these are happening, and they don't give you any reason. They just put them together. This is what we're going to do. If you like it, fine. If you don't, fine. I guess you get mad enough about it, you won't watch, but I like the wrestlers. I want to watch what they're trying to do. But I did want to talk about, going back to the Usos Street Profits, because I know we haven't talked about that, weirdly enough, but I really loved the build tonight to that match. I really liked it. I thought both of them were spot on. I mean, Montez goes a little crazy, some of the word, you know, the way he talks. But, I mean, bottom line, I'm at least thinking the Street Profits have a chance. Do I think they're going to win tomorrow night? No, I don't, because the Usos have something good going, like they're a great tag team, this and that. But I think the Street Profits could get a boost by winning the tag team championships. I think it would help them a lot. But what did you think about the stuff between – I didn't like – I mean, the Ask Anything was kind of like whatever. It was like what they do. It's just kind of something different. Let's try it. So I'm glad they tried something different. But I love the promo between both of them. I thought it was really intriguing, and it got you into the match. What did you guys think about it?
Alex, what did you think?
I actually love this segment. I was kind of disappointed going into this that they had done nothing to build this match, because, you know, it will deliver one way or the other. But I'm glad that they circled back and gave us a reason to care about it. I thought both teams came off really, really well. I thought the star of the segment was Montez Ford by a mile. When he's not being a goofball, and we talked about this a little bit earlier with Bianca, I kind of alluded to this. But when Ford's not being a complete goofball, mm-hmm. that guy just shows so much potential. And you know, we've talked about the lack of baby faces on SmackDown, like, every time I've been on the show. And I wouldn't mind if during the draft they split them up and send Montez to SmackDown to be a solo baby face to try to build up that side a little bit. Because I think he's one of the very few guys in the company that they could kind of start small and build up slowly with, that actually has the potential to grow kind of in front of our eyes, you know, almost in like an Edge kind of way. But I thought he came off great. I thought the segment came off great. And I actually liked the idea of the Ask Them Anything, because I think the other option would have been our 4,000th contract signing of 2022. So this worked much better for me than that would have.
I thought the weirdest part of that segment, and I did like it, was the reference to, you say we're not getting along. Well, who reported that? Oh, it must be the Dirt Sheets. That just sort of felt like a weird thing to put in the promo. Well, what did you make of that, Alex?
Yeah, I actually picked up on that too. What I thought was weird about it, though, was I kind of took it a different direction than you did. I thought it was interesting that Ford kind of no-sold it, and Dawkins immediately chimed in with, no, we're bros, or whatever he said, something to that effect. And honestly, to what Sean said, I don't think they have a chance to win, but I'm starting to wonder if there's a chance they break up tomorrow.
I think that's interesting, and that might explain why they, you know, I just, you know, brought that up in a promo as sort of laying groundwork, because right now with the injuries they have, you know, we've been talking on Torch Podcast, you know, who could step up? Who would be the person who you go, all right, let's turn lemons into lemonade. You know, let's elevate somebody. Montez Ford might be that guy. You know, is he being held back? Have they done everything they can do with the Street Profits? And Montez has a higher upside. And with Cody going down, they're like, we need to put somebody in that spot. You know, we need, you know, they're very structured. And when you lose someone in that top spot, what do you do? Who do you turn? And you don't want to rush a Sammy turn. You know, Madcap Moss was already on the trajectory he's on. You know, like, who do you elevate or who do you bring up from NXT? And they don't have a lot of people main roster ready there where the timing feels right. So Montez doing some singles matches and breaking off that way, that could work. And maybe this is planting a seed for that, Alex.
And I mean, I guess I've always kind of assumed if they did break up that it would be Dawkins that turns, right? Like,
yeah.
That's kind of the safe assumption, isn't it?
I mean, unless they think Ford just is going to be this great, arrogant heel. But I just think his ring style, you know, because Ford maybe can pull it off on the microphone. And it'd be fun to watch, you know, and see that side of him. But ring style-wise, and I just think the way fans have an affinity for him, I think it would be a mistake. But, you know, I'm sort of just talking through the possibility. Yeah, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, the other thing, too, and it would be a harder sell if Ford was the one to turn, because he's so much smaller than Dawkins. It'd be kind of weird if the bigger guy was the face, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of talking through it at the same time, like kind of thinking out loud. But I don't know. I don't think that Dawkins is like dead in the water if they do break up. But I do think Dawkins is dead in the water if he's like a comedy face. You know, think of like what Otis was when Heavy Machinery broke up. I think that would be a big problem. But that's why, I don't know. I like the idea better of just waiting a little bit and breaking them up organically in the draft. And Dawkins goes to Raw and Montez goes to SmackDown and we just go from there, as opposed to what, they have a feud and Montez wins and then Dawkins is super defined down and Montez does what? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, I just don't think that's the best option. But due to their lack of top baby faces, that might be the break glass option.
Sean, your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. No, I have kind of thought about that prior, and I would definitely want to see, I mean, if they turn on each other, I definitely want to see Angelo turn on Montez. I want Montez to be the face. I think he would be just a really good babyface singles guy. I think Angelo just, I don't know, seems like, I don't know, for some reason, it seems like he has a nastier vibe to me in some ways, where like he would be just a kind of a nasty heel, or could be more, you know, make you want to hate him a lot, which I think would be good. But I don't know if they're going that route, but I mean, I would like it. So I think it'd be fine. I want to hear, I'm glad Javier's on tonight. I kind of want to hear what he thinks too, but I want to say also at the beginning, kind of where I was going with the, you know, the women's stuff, not, you know, not really making a lot of sense other than Becky on commentary, you know, even at the beginning, it's like, once they do the battle royal, it's like, what's the purpose of the battle royal? They just, you know, an old fashioned battle royal. It's like, well, what purpose did it serve? Like nothing. I mean, nobody got anything from it. Corbin won it, but then he lost in the four way. So it didn't really do anything for him. Like, he just wasted time in a battle royal all day. It's like, so what did that do? But so I wanted to hear, I'm kind of curious what, you know, Javier thinks about all that too. But I, and going back to what you said, Wade, earlier too, about, because I think Becky and Seth are going to win the money in the bank briefcases, just because I think, you know, they want to have it on big stars and that they think they're the biggest stars and that's probably what they're going to do. But
sure.
I'm with you, Wade. I want Sammy to win so bad. I was talking to a friend of mine that's, you know, kind of follows it. And Sammy, again, was just such a good babyface, you know, in NXT when he first came up to the main roster. And the story they're building, like you said, could be really, really good. And I really hope they do something like that, because it would be a great story. It'd be something WWE hasn't done in a while. Put it on somebody you don't expect. And I think they could get, you know, so much out of it. So I hope they do it. Nick, I'm glad you got on, man. Javier, you're the best. Wade, I appreciate you, man. Alex, always good talking to you about WWE. I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you. We had another call I want to get to here before Javier. No, two more calls for Javier. We'll go to William in San Diego next. William, thanks for holding. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, so, you know, there's more something to do with news from, I guess, yesterday, but they did also play it or announce it today on SmackDown. But what do you guys think about the Logan Paul signing? You know, I don't know if you have any thoughts, because right now I'm kind of just like wait and see, and I'm assuming that's probably where you guys are too. You know, we've only seen like that one match he had at WrestleMania where he exceeded a lot of people's expectations, but, you know, it's one thing to do like a WrestleMania match where I guess a lot of people don't have a lot of expectations going into it. But once you get into, you know, the whole WWE system, and I don't think it's going to be like a weekly character or anything. But I think he will still be doing more and probably get a little more exposed. And the only thing that worries me is that he's been pretty, I've seen some clips of him being like vocal about not liking people booing him and almost Ronda Rousey like in that. He seems pretty, I don't know if offended is the right word, but against that kind of thing. He wanted to be a face. And I think that's where the money is him being a heel. So that's like the big red flag that I'm seeing with the whole signing at this moment. But I don't know, where are you guys on the signing?
I had a neighbor who doesn't like know anything about pro wrestling ask me if I heard that, because he got the headline on his phone. You know, it's one of the reasons WWE does this, is just, you know, kind of get on the radar of the mainstream. So in that sense, anecdotally, you know, it's working. I don't know how valuable that is for people who only know about WWE happenings when something big happens that makes it to their phone, you know, headlines and alerts. They're not really making you any money or watching. But it is, you know, he's enough of a name where it resonates in that way. But mostly it's he's really talented and he's really a fan. And I think the number one concern is precisely what William brings up, Alex, is if he wants to be a babyface and fans reject him, you know, does it go south the way it has with Ronda? I don't think Logan will act the same way. But if he wants to be cheered and, you know, the idea is, oh, Miz will work his magic, you'll be cheered. Well, maybe, but then what happens next? Like, I think they're going to have to be careful with how they book him. You know, I think there's risk in that. You know, his deal is just to work some premium live events, you know, for the next few years. And so he'll be doing, you know, SummerSlam, WrestleMania type stuff, maybe another one or two in the mix. We'll see how that pace plays out. Sometimes, you know, they frame it vaguely because they're going to play it by ear, or they don't know how things are going to go, and they're, or in this case, it might be locked in, and they're going to, you know, they've got them for X number of TV dates to build up to these, you know, two or three pay-per-view or PLE appearances per year. But there's a good chance of diminishing returns. There's also a chance he just turns out to be really talented and a compelling figure who works well with the way WWE presents her TV shows, and he's a fresh act when it's time to build up to a big match, and he'll elevate some of the people he works with. So, like, you know, I think I pitched on my YouTube rebooking WrestleMania video that I put up a few months back, the idea of the Street Profits in a match with Logan Paul just to elevate, you know, Montez Ford's star power. So as we're talking about Montez, and if he were to break up, if Logan Paul was a heel and Ford was a babyface, that's a way to elevate Montez Ford. And so maybe we end up seeing something like that, even if that's not in the plans now, and maybe the fan reaction will determine some of that. If they decide to have Montez be a heel, if they think that he's got it in him and that's the right route to take before turning a babyface as a single star, then a babyface Logan Paul, again, maybe elevates Montez's star power, his Q rating, his overall recognition with, you know, casual and part-time fans. So in that way, that's where Logan can be perhaps more valuable. It doesn't have to just be Montez, but we've been talking about him, and I think I talked about him WrestleMania week too as an option who could benefit from that. Alex, your thoughts on that?
As far as Montez goes, that's actually a really good pairing. I like that a lot. For Logan Paul though, if that guy thinks that he's a babyface, then I got really 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 bad news for him. And I don't know. I don't know where that was reported that he wants to be cheered, but I know about him kind of, I don't know. I don't follow him, but I know things from him being in WWE and looking up different things about him and spending $9 bajillion on Pokemon cards. Like, I'm super honest and tell you that I think he's self-aware enough that he's well aware that people do not like him. And I think he and his brother play into that. So I don't know how much I believe that he wants to be cheered as a babyface. I don't know if I buy that, because what has gotten him famous is being a douche. Like, that's what his stick is.
Yes.
And I think he's well aware of that. If he's not, then I guess I'm giving him way too much credit. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, if this contract is anything significant, there's a really, really, really good chance that this guy is going to be probably in one of the main events of a WrestleMania in the next 3 or 4 years.
Like, wow. Wow.
Last match, because he showed a lot in the first one.
Yeah.
If he improves from that and the character's there and he's a top heel and we're not going to have Reigns as much, and, you know, let's be honest, how much longer do we have Brock?
I know.
You know,
yep,
when we're starting to look at 3-4 years from now, the cupboard is not super duper full. So there's a strong chance that a guy like this with the notoriety, there's a chance he's your night one WrestleMania main event, and, you know, WrestleMania 40, WrestleMania 41.
He had really good instincts for a guy from the outside coming in. And a real good athletic aptitude. He didn't draw undue attention to himself, but he didn't seem like the stage was too big for him either. He hit that sweet spot. And if he's a babyface, he's got like Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, after Miz waiting for him. If they want to go that route, if he goes heel, I mean, you could do like the night one WrestleMania type thing against Cody, for instance. And the Montez thing that I talked about, Montez as a face. Eventually Sami as a face against Logan as a heel. I mean, if it goes well, there's some options out there. I'm sure I'm like leaving off. I'm trying to stay away from matches that just feel like they wouldn't be credible for him. I think they have to be careful. Like, you know, Lesnar, Lashley, even Roman Reigns. Randy Orton. Yeah, it feels like that's pushing it. It doesn't just feel like it is. It is pushing it if they were to go that direction. So you got to be careful with him. But yeah, I'm trying to think of other heels who, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like Happy Corbin, you know, okay, whatever. Edge is going to be a babyface, so that's not going to happen. Austin Theory, you know, babyface Logan against heel Austin Theory, that might work. Maybe they sacrifice Veer for him. I mean, so yeah, there's various options that they can do. William, back to you. Either follow up on that or a change of subject. And we got to keep the pace up a little bit because we're running long here.
Yeah, just going back to something quick that Alex mentioned about the report. I did see that report, but it's also something that, you know, I saw like a clip from a podcast, and I think it came like directly from, you know, the horse's mouth. It was with Becky, and she was like giving him praise, like, you know, so many celebrities coming to WWE, and they feel insecure about getting booed, and they want to be cheered or whatever. And she was giving him praise, like, but not you. You were like embracing it, and it almost turned into an awkward situation where he was like, "Oh no, actually, I don't like getting booed. I want to get cheered." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't remember how she turned around into like, you know, not being awkward." But that's where my worry is with him. But I want to talk also about Ezekiel. I think he had a pretty rough night with the losses. You know, obviously with Kevin Owens being out, I don't know for how long. Is this just a case of, well, he doesn't have anyone to play off of with the whole Ezekiel gimmick. So I guess for now we're just kind of giving up on him. Like, who cares? That's the one note from his character that we care about him. So, you know, he'll just take the losses because we don't have that much invested in him. Or do you guys read anything into it?
Alex, your thoughts.
At this point, I don't know why we don't throw some face paint on Zeke and just call him like Sting Warrior, because he does both of their moves and he has the tassels. So, like, he's like the new Blade Runner to me. I don't know why they don't just go the full mile. but in all seriousness, I'm kind of – I think it's funny, but I'm kind of over it. And I don't know. Let's just get a third face and have him be Elrod now for like a month.
There we go. Go ahead, William. Any closing words from you?
Yeah, last topic, and I'll let you guys go because yeah, it's been a long night for you guys. Going back to your opening talking point about the male Mexican models, whatever they're called. I've been really digging the whole Max Dupree thing, you know, the way he talks super close to peers and everything. I think is really good. Talker, very funny. I think he really gets his character in a way that a lot of other WWE wrestlers don't really like hone into their own characters. So I'm pretty big on him, but the whole gimmick with bringing Massey or Mansoor or whatever, I feel I'm almost afraid that they might hold him down or like bring him down or whatever, as opposed to him like bringing them up with this character or talking skills. But I almost just, I don't know, I want him to like see break off on his own and do his own thing. So all you guys, you know,
thanks.
Get to other stuff. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Appreciate it. Yep. So I do not believe, Alex, that Massey and Mansoor, or however we're going to say it, Mason Mansoor's name now, are going to pull Max Dupree down. I think they are exactly at the level that you would expect for this gimmick and for Max Dupree. I don't think Max Dupree is a main event manager. I don't think he's meant to be. I don't think that's the trajectory. The tone isn't right. And I think Mason Mansoor were lost in the bottom third of the roster, bottom fourth of the roster. And this gives them something to do. And they can, you know, this might be the peak of their career. Maybe they break out and do something more after this. I think that it's a good fit, and it seems like the right tone for both guys. And I mean, since Max Dupree was doing his thing as Eli Drake in Impact Wrestling, it was just like, this guy's tailor-made for WWE. You know, he's in the mold of kind of the Miz type, where you're not going to get great matches. And I think Miz is a more seasoned in-ring versatile performer than Max Dupree or Eli Drake, and that really says something, you know, because Miz kind of knows King of Soft style. Drake was not, you know, praised for his matches. Not that they're bad. It's just that's not his strength. His strength was standing in the ring and holding court with a microphone. And so I'm not surprised that they have him doing mic work and not wrestling. I haven't heard he's injured or isn't going to wrestle or anything like that. I assume at some point he'll get in the ring, but obviously they have him there because of his talking skills, but he's doing a mid-card gimmick, and WWE has those. And so I think it matches up just fine. Alex.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's dragging anybody down here. If anything, Dupree is elevating Mace and Mansoor a little bit. The Mace thing came off a little awkward. I actually thought Mansoor with the new haircut and the deal with the sunglasses at the end, I thought he embraced this pretty well. I'm curious if he's the one that benefits the most from this in the long run. But I don't know. Dupree could be repackaged as something else and end up a different style manager down the road. Or he's the next Rico Constantino, you know? There's just no way to know. Speaking of, I wonder what he's doing now, because having him show up in a cameo for this could be funny.
Yep. All right, very good. Let's keep rolling here, and we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore and then Javier on deck. Kyle, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
What's been right about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah. Well, I get to that other call talking about me being like saying that the reason why Becky is the person who's going to win the briefcase is a lot of reasons, not only because she's on the cover, but because of the reaction she's gotten on Raw and also tonight. I don't know if you saw it, but the when Raw was over, she was and they put a video out on the YouTube channel, and Becky was on the mic talking about her finally being in Money to Bake. people were cheering the crap out of this woman, and she is still very popular. She's more popular than Bianca Belair. And I felt, and with Bianca real fast, Bianca, I said this on Monday, Bianca to me is, like you said earlier, she's good on the chase, but she's terrible as champion, as a babyface, because she's that interesting, she's that compelling, she is not Becky Lynch. and as she's not, I don't find her interesting. Becky's more interesting, and people sense that. They like crapping on Becky in terms of a heel. They like to play along with that, but deep down, people want to cheer this woman, and that's why I think she's going to win. She's too good right now, and that's just how I feel about Becky right now. That's just how I feel about it. It's like it's too obvious. Just go ahead and do it. Might as well just do it because I can't see no other option but Becky winning and be champion again. Though people may not like that, but it is what it is. Bianca just needs to be a heel at this point because she's doing nothing for me at all as a babyface. That's my two cents on the whole Becky stuff.
Sure. Yep. What else have you got, Kyle?
And so it's tonight was just really weird. I agree with the whole thing with having the women just there and not really matter, all that stuff. I don't really get that part. The part with saying what I was interested about is this whole battle royal stuff. It's like, yeah, why did he have to do that? What was the point of that? I thought they was going to be cutting promos with each other, with the women and also the men. When they announced they were going to do this, have all the women on Raw, I assumed they were going to just cut promos with each other and not have a match. So that was a waste. And same thing here. So what was the point of that? Just because to give something? Why not just have promos with each other? That was it. I guess they have 2 hours. Again, nothing else for that. But I don't know. What do you think about that? I thought it was going to just lead to, especially with the women, just them cutting promos with each other, not just a match. I didn't think about that.
Well, I mean, this show, Alex, had three matches total. If you take away that women's match, they got to put something else in there. And I don't know what that is because they don't like putting content on a show that isn't – I mean, I guess we got the Maximum Male Models. But that we don't get, you know, content on the show that's just a match that doesn't have anything to do with the pay-per-view. And even though I would advocate for that, I think having a squash match – a quick short match to start building the foundation for somebody you plan to push going into SummerSlam or even this fall, it's an opportunity to do that. I guess they might, yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, they have a lot of pointless matches. They have a lot of TV time to fill, and they fill it by mixing and matching the same people constantly against each other. And it's, they see it as a feature, not a flaw, but sometimes it leads to matches feeling repetitive and pointless. But in this case, it is a novel matchup of women from two brands who also are accentuating or spotlighting some of the issues that they have with each other and some of their strengths. And in the end, they told the story that Liv got a win, and Cole could say that makes her a favorite. So I think that they had probably, three, four, five boxes that they checked in this match that they felt contributed to the story they're telling Saturday at Money in the Bank. So I'm not sure this, in their mind, qualifies as pointless or having no context, even if it felt in some ways a little random. But again, it fits hyping Money in the Bank the way that they tend to do when they lead into matches like this. Alex, anything you want to add to that?
No, again, it's just a way to feature everybody. I think that it's – I don't think it's necessarily a throwaway, but, I mean, like you said, what – for everybody saying it was pointless, what did you want in that spot instead? Like, would you have rather seen Madcap Moss and Corbin for the 50th time or, a Gunter squash? I mean, I guess I would have preferred a Gunter squash, but that doesn't take up 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I just – that's kind of where I'm at on it is what's the answer as to what would you rather have here?
Yeah. I mean, they just don't have depth. You know, they're not – there's not an undercurrent of talent that they're building up that then they're going to elevate. They elevate people the moment that they decide to push somebody is when they decide to push them. And, I mean, can't put Ricochet out there, right? I mean, you could do Ricochet against Butch. They'd have a good match. But that's not – in their mind, that accomplishes nothing. You know, Butch is a side character. They're not going to expose him in a singles match like that with no context to it. And Ricochet is lost, so they're going to keep him off TV until he comes back refreshed. I mean, so just the way they operate.
Either, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so anyway. Oh, what else, Kyle?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my thing too is about Ronda and Natalya. Is this not clicking with me at all? Is this not interesting? The quicker they take the title off of Ronda, whichever how way they do it, whoever's going to take it off of it, if it's going to be Charlotte, then fine. Something needs to change with the SmackDown Women's Championship, like I feel about the Raw Women's Championship. Both champions need to change, like I said, it's on Monday, but it's just not good. And Ronda has been so boring, just like Bianca, but just very different, but the same at the same time. But that's it. Just a short call.
Cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. Very sudden finish to Kyle's comments there, but that's just fine. We will move to Javier next, and then we'll hopefully have time for some emails too. So let's jump over to Javier here, PWTorch.com contributor. You can read his preview for Money in the Bank any minute now. It's probably up on the website. If you're not listening to us live, it should be up by the time you download and listen to the show. Javier Machado, welcome. And it is, you don't say anything yet. Now you can talk. Welcome, Javier.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. I was going to stay quiet until you played the music. I was not going to speak. I mean, we're there.
Good for you. Good for you. I mean, I know it's in the contract.
I mean, yeah. I do have a feeling that I'm kind of turning heel because I'm starting to really enjoy the really bad stuff. I've been really enjoying Ronda Rousey just to see how far the train wreck goes.
Yeah,
my favorite moment the entire week, my favorite thing of the entire week, and I am including Forbidden Door. It was the Maximum Male Model thing. They really got me with Massey and Massois. That and the spelling. That was just.
You know, by the way, I was scrambling on my Mac keyboard to find all the symbols. Like, I didn't have time to get all of them, but I got most of them. So if you read my report. The, like, accent marks or whatever we call those things, most of them are there. You know, it's like option E gave me what I needed. So, yeah, I'm not going to do that every time. But you know, yeah, that was – they went all in, Javier.
And I also have to give Alex a slow clap for – because I'm usually more diplomatic. But the takedown – the brutal takedown of Sasha Banks, I really appreciated that. I'm totally on the same boat with you.
Yeah, I don't know. We can talk more about it if you want, but I just I'm not allowed to do that at my job and get cheered for it. So I don't understand. And the other part of it too is how come Hulk Hogan is like the worst person in the world for the that doesn't work for me, brother. But Sasha Banks does this and she's a hero. Like, what is that?
Well, I mean, and my thing is it's over the tag team title, which really don't really mean anything. So, I mean, I could understand frustration over, you know, being badly booked and stuff like that. And maybe that was just a, you know, she was already done. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back kind of situation. I could kind of get where it may be coming from, but yeah, it's, and I'm kind of like more in the Japanese mindset of, you know, don't disappoint the fans, mm-hmm. which is, you know, segue that to my pick for the women's Money in the Bank is that, you know, I agree with you, Wade, where you're saying that, oh, they're saying that Liv is, you know, on, you know, winning, you know, she's, you know, she's in a winning streak and all that stuff, which kind of guarantees that she's not. And if she doesn't, I think that's like such a hard, like, it's like a death knell for her character. Because they've really been building up, you know, her character as, you know, is this the time where she's finally going to break through? She's going to have a shot here, and the fact that she got a win over Alexa Bliss on Monday, gets the pin here, in WWE booking, that does usually, you know, mean that she's not winning, but I think that you're getting her fans' hopes up. And, you know, just for that, for them to be disappointed tomorrow. So I chose her to win. I know it's a bad choice, but I did choose her to win because I'm hoping that she, you know, that you know, that it doesn't, you know, not everybody who wins the title, who wins the briefcase is going to be like, you know, for a WrestleMania or SummerSlam level event, you know. So
sure. Yeah, that's,
sometimes,
that's
like, you know, weird people get it. So, I think that would be something that would help her character out. But, I mean, I may just be saying that to put it into the air and hope it into existence.
Alex?
Oh, on Liv Morgan? I've said it before. I don't get it, man. I don't get it. She does nothing for me. I could not care less about her.
I'm beginning to get her a little bit, and that's why I think that, like, this is the opportunity to do something with her. But, you know, if you don't, yeah. It's, you know, curtains.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just said curtains in it. I am so old. Speaking of old, what do you make of them calling the Battle Royal the good old-fashioned Battle Royal?
Yeah, that is... We're not, there's not progressive entrances every 90 seconds. There's not two rings. I don't, you know, it's not everyone starts in the ring. It's not a reverse battle royal. I guess they're just trying to, you know, let people know it's just a good old standard battle royal. But yeah, yeah.
Well, tonight really was a good old.
Go ahead, Alex.
Tonight really was a good old-fashioned battle royal because a bunch of the guys worked twice. That was like the territory days.
That's true. Yes, totally. Yep.
Well, and my favorite thing about it was there's a moment where on commentary, McAfee says, you know, what is this battle royal for? And without missing a beat, Cole goes, supremacy. Like, whoa.
Yes. Oh no, we did it in the Navi year. It's been nice. Let's play his jingle as a memorial. It's been good. We finally lost him. Are you Javier's brother who looks like him but has a beard?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Javier has a beard. I don't have a beard. Actually, I shaved it down a lot, so I could almost pass for my own brother now. Speaking of, I'm jumping all over the place. You mentioned Elrod. I want to see Kevin Owens when he comes back from whatever, you know, he's going happening now. I want to see him come back as Elrod.
And explain that more. How does that work?
Well, he just shows up and starts calling himself Elrod and to try to mess with Ezekiel, and Ezekiel just plays along with it. And then he just gets frustrated.
I have one better. He should come back as Kyle Owens. And do the same thing, but he's Kyle now.
Hey, did he already hint or play that up, Javier Alex? Did he already... Didn't he already do a bit where he said he was his relative and then just blew it off and said that's ridiculous?
Oh,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember that. So something like that. Yeah, I am for that. I am for something regarding Elrod. I mean, honestly, Butch would have been a great Elrod, but that's taken. He's taken up in a different gimmick. But he looks like Vince McMahon would look at. He seems like Vince McMahon would look at him and go, "You're Elrod." Adam Cole could have been Elrod, and he wouldn't have had a bad concussion from a Hangman stiff kick that Hangman's kind of known for, or just, you know, being stiff. He could be concussion-free and a mid-card gimmick act. Anyway, I'm off on a sidebar. Go ahead, Javier.
Drew McIntyre... did challenge Roman Reigns for the Clash of the Castle. Roman Reigns never, you know, accepted or anything, so it still leaves open the possibility for him to win the title and then use that to get the shot.
It seems like they would have been playing up Drew saying, if Roman doesn't give me a title, you know, like playing up that Roman's scared of me and he hasn't answered my challenge yet. Maybe they think that'd be forecasting or telegraphing too much, but that's not WWE's fear usually. So usually they just lay the groundwork and then do the obvious. And so I mean, I'm not saying it won't happen, but if it does, it seems like they should have made more of an issue in the meantime of Drew issuing that challenge, but Roman seeming like he's scared or running or avoiding answering.
Which, if he were around, maybe that might be happening. but
you could have Kayla pressing Paul. You could have Kayla pressing Paul on it.
If he were around more often, hopefully that would have been happening. But
yeah. Paul's better.
You know, it's. I mean, and then because this was one, but the other my plan B for that would be, he wins the Money in the Bank, also gets the title shot for the Clash of the Castle. And then he loses due to cheating, and then immediately cashes in so he can win the titles. Because he's that. What I mentioned about Liv Morgan, I think Drew McIntyre is also on the same boat, where he's got to come out of that. I mean, he can't lose. He has to win the title, one of the titles. But I think they're probably going to, you know, somehow explain, you know, like if he does use it to cash, you know, like for example, if he gets the title shot, loses, and then cashes it in. Then they could say, "Oh well, the contract's only for one title, so you only get one," and then use that as the excuse to how to break them up or something along those lines. But I think it's more likely. I mean, I like the idea. I do like the idea of the Sami Zayn thing, but I think more likely it's going to play into the Drew and Clash of the Castle.
And I was thinking as you were talking, if Drew McIntyre, like trying to get McIntyre relevant again. At his peak level, it might mean a heel run. And then it made me think, hey, you know, if Logan Paul catches on as a babyface, if fans just see him as a real wrestling fan, he's handling things the right way, he's being a professional, they book him well, there's some headwind there, but if they make it work, Logan Paul undersized against a bigger heel, Drew McIntyre, is acting arrogant. Maybe that works too. You know, when you start talking about night one of WrestleMania, if you're looking that far ahead and looking at, you know, what you think within the realm of possibilities, the higher end is for Logan, a heel Drew might be a good opponent. And maybe that would be something fresh for Drew to do. Cause when I look at the landscape, I just don't see a lot fresh for Drew as a babyface or heel with people they have. Babyface Montez Ford getting a major singles push against a heel Drew works. A babyface Sami Zayn defending against a heel Drew feels fresher than just about anything I can think of right now. That's Drew as a babyface. So there might be some options there, and maybe using Money in the Bank as a way to kind of elevate him in the short run too. But Alex, anything you want to respond to there?
The only thing with Drew is that what do you do if he wins one of them? Then he goes back to Raw, and then SmackDown has no one still. Like, that's my only problem with Drew, if he cashes in and wins the title, is I think if you're going to use that situation to split the titles back up, it has to be Seth or Riddle because they're on Raw. I don't think you can take more away from SmackDown right now.
Yeah.
Well, this would be in September, so it would, you could just follow it up with the draft because it's been about a year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So,
there you go.
I do have a question. The whole Dawkins and Ford thing, where they mentioned that they're not getting along, was that just invented today, or is there something I missed?
I think it was just invented. I haven't seen anything on it. Have you, Alex, seen anything out there? Not that you're devouring wrestling social media, but.
Well, I mean, considering the fact they said it was in the dirt sheets, I made the assumption that you reported it, Wade.
Yes, and I didn't, but I appreciate the shout out. Yes. I got an unnamed shout out in Brian Gewirtz's new book coming out in next month when he made the most influential list. But I think that's all embargoed, so scratch that. But, you know, I enjoy anonymous shout-outs, but in this case, I did not report that.
Yeah, because the thing about it does seem like that's a setup for them breaking up, but I'm also thinking that if they do break up tomorrow, who's there for the Usos? I'm thinking that the feud's going to continue at least until SummerSlam. Since it looks like they're building up the Viking Raiders, I think that at some point Street Profits win the title
and, you know, to go up against the Viking Raiders.
I guess, yeah. And then they'd have to delay it. Yeah, if this was anti-breaking them up, then it's a longer story arc.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's – I mean, I think it'd go either way, but, that line did stick out for me. That was my favorite segment, too. It got me really pumped for that for the match because, I mean, I was – I mean, I literally call in the primer the rest of the matches other than the Money in the Bank matches superfluous. So,
yeah.
You know, so without much mattering. You gave me homework, Wade. I don't know if you were intended for me or you kept talking about the countouts.
Yes.
Yeah.
You did.
I looked
okay.
over the yeah.
And I
looked over the last.
Y'all gonna make it
the
through?
Last, yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
I still haven't been able to. I still have not been able to shake the cough. I looked over for like the last year and a half, and
yeah.
there have been an average of about 1.5 countouts every month. So.
There's no change in frequency.
There was a whole bunch this April, which was during the whole they were doing two storylines that was involving that. It was the main one was Sami Zayn escaping from his matches because he got countouts against
right.
Shinsuke, McIntyre a few times. So there was a cluster on April. Same thing for last year. There was a cluster last April also. And then, and the other ones were like, the ones with MVP and Almost, so there was like a big cluster in April, but they've been averaging about 2 every month. And the only months that didn't have any were August, of 2021 and May of 2021. Other than that, they've been,
Well, those might be facts, Javier, but they don't fit the narrative that I've been pushing. So I'm going to ignore them. and go with the fact that there's been a lot more the last 3 months than there had been in the previous 10 years. I'm kind of married to that
though.
As a narrative. Yeah.
To bolster your argument, they have been played off. Okay.
Yeah.
So because they've been part of the storyline and they've made a bigger deal. Some of the some of the ones I recognize have been they fight and then, it was a reason just to end the match, or
yeah.
someone runs after someone and they get a count out it didn't really count as opposed to being part of the storyline. And that's the thing is like the most recent ones, they are all serving a purpose while the other ones was just a way to get out of the match.
Yeah. I'll find a way to spin that. And I was right all along. Thank you.
So that's basically your way of saying that if you find facts that are inconvenient, don't bring them up again.
No. I mean, well, kinda. I mean, that wasn't what I was getting at. But more directly, it's just if you bring up facts that don't fit the impression that I have, sort of like what did Colbert call him? Truthiness. Like, he'd say it doesn't feel true to me. What you said might statistically be accurate, but it didn't feel true to me. But you also kind of baked in to your answer afterwards, like it's, but they're playing it up more. So, the memorable countout finishes that are sort of something that WWE is working into storylines as opposed to just doing it, but not really addressing it. Like that's why it felt more true to me than the statistics might show. So I'm kind of leaning on that at the moment. But I, as far as homework goes, I did say there's more countouts this year than there had been combined in the previous 5. So I think that was my set. So if you can go back 5 years, Javier, and get back to me at your convenience.
Well, I mean, let's see. We've got 9 so far this year. And then 15 last year.
Yeah, so we need to mark this part of
the
show
year.
For edit.
But yeah, so
all right.
All right, guys. Be on the lookout for the primer that I sent in earlier. So.
Cool. Yes, absolutely.
Thanks,
Javier. Yep. Hope your cough gets better. Enjoy the fourth. All right. So on that note, we did have Jay from Michigan write back because his connection was rough, and he did just add what he was going to. He emailed what he's going to add to the call. Wait, and Alex, hopefully you'll get to this. Sorry about the connection, but my take was definitely Becky winning the briefcase and starting a face turn building toward her facing Ronda at Mania in a you've been ducking me for years moment. Also wanted you to know what you guys think of Rollins winning for the men and being the perfect guy to sit on the outside circling Roman with the idea that he has his number. Absolutely, he's been telling that story. There's ways that can pay off, but winning Money in the Bank is part of, like, you know, the I have Roman's number is laying the breadcrumbs for also having Money in the Bank and circling him. And then he says, also, I think the Street Profits break up soon after tomorrow's certain loss. Ford becomes a better version of Ricochet. And why do you think Bayley's number wasn't called for Money in the Bank? Thanks, if you get to this. So a few things there. Yeah, Rollins saying I've got your number and winning Money in the Bank. I mean, they can play off that, Alex, in different ways, but they did lay the breadcrumbs from that for that to have it make sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, the only thing with Rollins to me that makes sense is if somehow separates the titles. But the issue with that is I think he's going to have to turn into a triple threat again so you don't pin Roman. And the issue with doing that at SummerSlam is how would a triple threat last man standing work?
My head hurts. My head hurt before you got to the question mark. Yeah.
So
I mean that is, you know, if we look at ways how do they split up the belts. Oh God. Anyway, yeah. I don't want to think that
hard. That's just the only I hate to keep harping on that, but I think that's where Seth plays into this. As far as everybody keeps bringing up both of them winning, if they do, they both better have his and hers like the stupidest looking briefcases we've ever seen.
have you thought about how they'll look?
No, but like if Seth had one that matched his suit every week, that would be pretty funny.
Yes.
And Becky's could have fur.
Oh, of course, yes. It's like 150 degrees. Why are you wearing fur, McAfee? By the way, as far as Ford becoming a better version of Ricochet, that I know you said better version, so you think you covered yourself there, but no. Montez Ford should be aspiring to be like, I mean, I'm trying to think of what a good comparison is, like Shawn Michaels, you know, a guy who was a really standout worker in a tag team, but had a lot of personality to show and turned out to be a long-term main eventer with 4-star-plus matches and is a generational icon of that, you know, for that generation or that era for fans. Like, that's what you want Montez Ford to be, is Shawn Michaels, not Ricochet.
Agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Why did Bayley's number not get called? I mean, it's either she's not healthy or they have a much more substantial spotlight plan for her when she does return, and throwing her in with six other women in a match that they don't want her to win because they don't want to give her the Money in the Bank. So she comes back and she loses. I mean, I think, can think of a lot of reasons you wouldn't call her number. If it's not their booking plans to have her win, makes no sense. I mean, it's hard to come up with a scenario where you want her losing her first match back and being in a crowd of a bunch of other women and not getting the spotlight. She is somebody who, when she comes back, it should be the thing people are talking about.
Yep. She should be the number one woman on whatever show she's on.
And we'll wrap up with one more. This goes back full circle to the top of the show. JB in Detroit says, I gotta at nothing sells the Money in the Bank match better to me than six or seven of the competitors in the match sitting in unity on top of ladders to start the show, only to banter back and forth and allowing everyone their turn to speak. The threat of hostility, violence, and intrigue is palpable. This is an example of where AEW gets it right and WWE misses the boat in terms of delivering on their promises for matches that entail stipulations and potential violence. Love the show and go VIP. You know, JB is you know, obviously sarcastic here. When I was watching the opening segment, it crossed my mind that this could just be a Being the Elite. It could also be an episode of Dynamite or Rampage. But I think if the Young Bucks had more booking say-so or the tone fit more the irreverence of how the Bucks produced their created their indie name, but also just sort of the Being the Elite thing, I could totally imagine a very special episode of Dynamite that was a 2-hour spoof of WWE. And, you know, like just have like, you know, just pick on all the tropes that WWE does and do the show. Now, the risk is some people might like it better. You might like it better, Alex, if they slow down the pace and really emphasize certain points and, you know, did some WWE tropes, but it's with all new talent in a new atmosphere with a red hot crowd, it might actually like for 1 week sort of work and it might backfire in a weird way. You don't want to do an intentionally bad show. So obviously this is more just like, I'm revealing a thought that went through my head more than something that I think is a great idea. But what would AEW do if they were to spoof WWE? They would totally have all their, you know, the six wrestlers in some six-way ladder match all on top of ladders standing there while the tallest guy's on the mat, you know, standing on the mat. And, I mean, they would do that. You know, that would be part of what you would do to spoof WWE. And it deserves to be spoofed. Yeah, it's not a great formula. The downside of that approach is a lot of what JB pointed out.
I have one question.
Yeah.
Who are the Young Bucks? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I was 90% sure you were kidding, but I love that 10% of me wasn't sure.
I'm kidding. No, actually, about them climbing the ladders, though, the caller earlier, the on-site correspondent, he mentioned that the arena was dark. Was nobody concerned for their safety climbing the ladders in the dark? Like, am I the only one that feels that way?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I bet they had just enough light to see where they were going. Like, you know, the arena wasn't really lit up for ring entrances, but there had to be enough light for them to climb. I mean,
I like picturing them doing it in the dark.
Like, they all wore night vision goggles and then handed them off to the ring announcer and the referee. Yeah. Little LED strips or glow-in-the-dark tape on the ladder rung so they know where to go. All right, Alex. Time flew by. It's been fun. Is there anything you want to add that we didn't get to?
No. We got to talk about the Street Profits, so I'm good.
Cool. Well, thanks, Alex, for joining me. Everybody check out his show with Patrick, reviewing 30 years ago Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters, learn about wrestling history, and be entertained. And thanks to our callers, our on-site correspondent, our emailers. Thanks to all the listeners. Have a great 4th. And we'll be by next time with more Pro Wrestling Podcast content. Thanks, everybody.